I've got good evidence to believe that.
Undeclared chemical warheads in Iraq.
The declaration that he made is proof positive.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
He's not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor.
This surge is a bad idea.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid denouncing the reported Bush administration plan to surge the number of troops in Iraq by a lot.
We have thrown the doors wide open to people who bring all points of view precisely because we want to figure out how to get this absolutely right.
White House spokesman Tony Snow. Democrats say they've got a lot of questions. CBS News correspondent Howard Arenstein.
Democratic Senator Joe Biden has announced a series of oversight hearings on Iraq to try to answer the question, where do we go from here? His Senate Foreign Relations Committee will open 4 weeks of public hearings on Wednesday with a panel of Iraq experts. Then on Thursday, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice answers the committee's questions about President Bush's new Iraq policy, expected to be revealed in a primetime address one night this coming week.
How close was it?
This was an extraordinarily close call.
CBS News aviation correspondent Bob Orr. Blowing snow, reducing visibility at the Denver airport, a couple of planes nearly colliding.
When the pilot broke through the clouds and was about to touch down, he saw that a small twin-engine turboprop plane had strayed onto the wrong runway and in front of the oncoming Frontier plane. He immediately went to maximum power. He pulled the nose of the plane up. And according to federal investigators, the two planes missed by about 50 feet.
Weather making news all around the country. High winds in South Carolina. Reporter Craig Beatty on a scene of devastation in Liberty.
There was a cluster of cars just mangled together. A Ford Explorer, in fact, was overturned sitting in the bed of a pickup truck that was in front of it.
80-mile-an-hour gusts in Southern California, another 20 inches of snow expected in Colorado. Meanwhile, still no snow in New York or New England, and that's a record for this date. WCBS's Peter Haskell taking a stroll in Central Park.
Just tell me what you would expect to normally be wearing on January 5th, taking a walk outside the park.
Probably two sweatshirts, long johns, jeans, pair of gloves, hat, scarf, long coat, thick coat.
What do you have now?
Sweatpants, sweatshirt, t-shirt.
Meningitis cases shutting down schools in Rhode Island. David Gifford is the director of the State Department of Health.
If we don't see an increase that we are concerned about, we expect to be able to open the schools on Monday.
Is your hound round? Too much flab on your lab? Your husky? Husky? New drug may provide some help. Government approving the first drug for obese canines. Veterinarian Dr. Annette Bauer.
Flintil is a medication approved to manage dog obesity alone. It is not to be used in people or in cats.
Markets closing down today. 82-point plunge. The Dow 65 points lower for the week. 12,398 the close. Good news on unemployment upsetting some of the traders. The NASDAQ also going down 19 points. The S&P off a little more than 8. This is CBS News.
My name is Leslie, and I've been smoke-free for 6.5 months.
Quitting smoking is hard, but millions of people have succeeded.
My name is Brad, and I've been smoke-free for 15 months now.
If you decide to quit smoking, visit Quit Assist, a free resource that links you to a wealth of expert quitting information, including websites, guides, quit lines, and more. It could help you find your own way to success.
My name is Etta, and I have been smoke-free for 4 years.
Quit Assist, a free information resource. Log on at philipmorrisusa.com.
The following is a paid commercial message.
It's estimated that over 200 million people in the U.S. suffer from herpes-caused cold sores. There are many products on the market today. Relieve One-Day Cold Sores Symptom Treatment is excellent because it relieves cold sore symptoms in just a day. Pain eases in minutes and other symptoms resolve in just 24 hours. Relieve is non-toxic, comprised of botanical extracts, and is 100% guaranteed. Millions of sufferers have found that Relieve works best for them. Only you can determine that Relieve is best for you. You can now buy Relieve at most major stores.
School out today in suburban Detroit, and not because of the weather.
This is the third Detroit area school district that had to cancel classes because of bus tire vandals. The timing itself was curious.
Students in the high schools are scheduled for final exams today.
Students didn't mind the unscheduled three-day weekend, but not this way.
I actually think that it's pretty rude that someone would do that.
Instead of a snow day, it was a bus day. Whatever the name, it turned this parent's schedule upside down.
This is not a free day for your child.
He will learn something today.
Ron Dewey, CBS News, Detroit.
48 years ago today, Buddy Holly's last record was released. In less than a month, he'd be dead in a plane crash in an Iowa cornfield. But on January 5th, 1959, Buddy Holly was flying high at the peak of a career that lasted only a couple of years. This is a live recording of that final hit, ironically titled, It Doesn't Matter Anymore.
I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
And now for the bonus round. March goes in like a lion and out like a lamb. How does April feel?
Insecure.
Correct. If you're peanut butter and I'm jelly, what's the audience?
A glass of chocolate milk.
Correct. About how many movies has Netflix delivered so far?
1 billion.
Correct! Netflix! Nearly 1 billion movies delivered so far. Zero late fees. Choose your movies online and get DVDs delivered right to your door in about one business day. A plan that's right for you from only $5.99 a month. Netflix! It's that easy.
So let's say you go shopping, and you walk into the first store you come to. The store says, hey, no need to shop those other stores. We'll give you our price and theirs too. What do you think? That would save you time. But then you come to your senses. How do you really know if you're getting the best deal?
Car insurance websites that promise multiple rate quotes can't speak for GEICO. Shop for yourself at GEICO.com. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Collins. Reporting for duty here on the first Friday of the new year. That means the weekend is just a couple of hours away. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show, live from the left coast. We originate in San Francisco. Our program's delivered by satellite to great radio stations in Monterey and Eureka, California, Coos Bay, Oregon, and Phoenix, Arizona. People listen online, too, at KRXA540.com, NovaMRadio.com, and a bunch of websites I don't even know about. We've got a great show lined up for you today. Coming up next hour, Larissa Alexandrovna, managing news editor from RawStory.com, is going to join us to comment on Bush's shuffle. Yeah, he finally found some generals who haven't opposed a surge in Iraq, and he's promoting them. Also, we're going to talk about the move of John Negroponte. Not a lateral move, but he took a demotion to trade in his crown as intelligence czar to be number two to Condi over at the State Department. Also on today's program, Professor Bo Gross-Cupp. He teaches at the University of California, Chico. And he's written a book called Strategic Terror, The Politics and Ethics of Aerial Bombardment. Is it terrorism when you rain down from the skies on innocent civilian populations? That's the question we'll pose to the professor coming up later. And in our third and final hour, we resume our normal programming on Fridays as Brad Friedman will join us. He's the proprietor of BradBlog.com. Lots of news about voting integrity issues, including yesterday's front page New York Times story that the federal agency, or actually I guess it's a contractor that is supposed to be certifying the electronic voting machines, big problems there. And they suspended certification quietly a few months back, even before the November elections, which means that any certification they offered is suspect, and it just brings into play the whole problem with electronic voting. Also, there's an update on the Riverside, California hacker challenge from that county supervisor who offered a 10-to-1 bet. He really regrets that. And we'll talk about the challenges to congressional candidates being seated from Florida, four different districts. That's going on in Washington right now. So that's ahead with Brad Friedman in our final hour today. Whenever the urge strikes you, you can call with a question or comment. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It's toll free. And as always, you can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com. 24/7. I appreciate comments and input, story ideas, subjects, topics, people you think ought to appear on this program. Bring it on. We'll do what we can with it. Robert Perry is an investigative journalist wrote for many fine publications, including Newsweek. He was one of the key reporters for the Frontline investigative series on PBS, especially during the 1980s. And he's currently the proprietor of ConsortiumNews.com, a great website where his work and the work of others is featured. Bob Perry, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Well, thank you, Peter.
I invited you. Well, same to you. Happy New Year. And by the way, congratulations. You made your fundraising goal. And if people still want to support Consortium News, I bet you have expenses coming up in the new year.
We always do. We always do.
And when was the last time you got paid for your work at Consortium News?
Well, I get paid a little bit here and there, but not an awful lot. Yeah. I was making a lot more when I was doing things for other news organizations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I invited you on because I was struck by two powerful pieces that you wrote following the death of former President Gerald Ford the day after Christmas. And I've gotten, I don't know, I guess I've gotten used to these extended nostalgia fests, the rewriting of presidential history during the period of a funeral, the wall-to-wall coverage that does not deign to bring us the truth about these individuals or even hint at it. It's hagiography all the time. And I wanted to, now that he's comfortably resting in Grand Rapids, and by the way, the other day I misstated, I thought they were actually going to bury him near the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, and I was wrong. I wanted to correct that little factoid. But now that he is resting, hopefully comfortably, I wanted to just open it up for an honest evaluation of Gerald Ford's presidency and his legacy. And what I found, Bob Perry, is just gross omissions by the media in their retrospective of this man's history.
Right. I think it's a disservice to people when you don't really talk about the truth. Their death ought to be a time not just to recall the good, but also some of the bad and some of the problems, and help explain the history to the American people. It's an opportunity, really, to sort of reflect back on what happened and how what happened back in Ford's era or in Reagan's era when he passed away is still affecting what's happening today. And I think it would be much more helpful to the American people and our democracy if there was an honesty about this instead of this effort to put everything on with a happy smile.
Yeah. Well, I happened to be deeply engaged in news and commentary at that time. I was a good bit younger and I had all my hair. And I was doing a late-night talk show in Chicago at the time of Richard Nixon's presidency and the serious problems that developed that we called Watergate. And, in fact, Watergate was something that propelled my radio show to the top of the ratings because we covered it in depth as the scandal unfolded. And then it was fascinating to see the shuffle as Nixon resigned under threat of impeachment and his handpicked and unelected successor, Gerald Ford, was named to the post. And then, Bob, it was so creepy, just a few weeks after Ford took office, I was working my extra shift to make a little money because we were still coming out of the wage and price controls that Nixon had imposed.
Right.
And so I took an extra shift on Sundays just to fill up my gas tank and things like that. And so there I was on Sunday morning playing some badly mixed rock and roll records. And we were instructed to go to the network for a bulletin. And we did as we were told. And the network newscaster, the anchor, came on and said, we now take you to the White House for a special announcement from President Gerald Ford. And that was when he announced his pardon of Richard Nixon. And what was so ironic, and you can imagine how this stuff works, you never know what commercial is going to come up. And after we had paused for this network bulletin, the network went directly to a commercial, and it was for Bayer aspirin. And the opening line was an announcer who said, "How does America handle a headache?"
Oh, well.
And the answer is, with a pardon.
Well, it was a way to get some of the trouble off the front pages, but the problem with Ford's pardon was that he did not demand that Nixon provide any full accounting of what he'd done. It was an unconditional pardon, as you remember. And so that meant that Nixon could continue, essentially, to lie and cover up about what he'd actually done during Watergate. And it took years and years for much of that truth to come out. And in the meantime, many of Nixon's supporters felt that Nixon had been unfairly treated, that he was innocent, that there was no real evidence against him, and they began this effort to counter what they saw as this injustice by building up their own media, by building up their attack groups to go after the press. So a great deal of momentum was built up in the late 70s among these hard right groups, well funded by some of these conservative foundations like Richard Mellon Scates and so forth, that began to build this, what we now know is sort of this right wing machine that we deal with all the time. But much of that was driven by the fact that they felt that Nixon had been abused by the press and by the Democrats, and that he was innocent. And it's really taken years and years, as some of these tapes have finally been released, of Nixon giving orders and making these highly anti-Semitic and other offensive comments during this period, that Americans now realize that Nixon wasn't innocent, that he was quite guilty, and probably guilty of more than we understand still. I tend to believe, based on the evidence we see in front of us now, that he probably did order the original Watergate break-ins. He certainly encouraged them.
Oh, yeah.
But at that point, and the conventional wisdom for years after that, was that Nixon was sort of caught in something he really didn't appreciate and then tried to cover it up, and then his only problem was the cover-up. You still hear this reprise all the time. The big problem is not the crime, but the cover-up. But I think Nixon was involved in the original crime. He certainly was. He put the plumbers in place, had them go after other people, break-ins, and do other things. And I think he certainly benefited from some of the information coming out that the plumbers were getting out of the Democratic National Committee.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the evidence is quite strong that Nixon was much more guilty than we knew at the time. But because Ford gave him the unconditional pardon, he never had to acknowledge what he had done. And it allowed this sense of that Nixon had been betrayed to build up this anger, this animosity, which continues with us today.
Yeah. And I imagine you've made the trip because you live in the D.C. area. But once while visiting, I went to that little warehouse-type building. I think it's in Alexandria, Northern Virginia, where the Watergate tapes are available to the public for listening. And I spent 4 or 5 hours in there. It was fascinating, Robert, to listen to the actual recorded conversations from the Oval Office. And there is clearly the evidence of Nixon's guilt. He was running the cover-up, and he clearly knew the dimensions of it. Whether he gave the order, you know, for the original break-in to the Watergate is, you know, still not clear to me. But he was right in there and on top of it and very actively managing it to the extent that his underlings permitted.
Right. I think that's true. And I think it is shocking to hear some of this. And I think the tapes are now over at the College Park facility for the National Archives, at least the ones I've dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
But when you read through the transcripts, sometimes they're hard to even listen to because it is a bit grainy, but if you read the transcript, some of these comments that Nixon made were so inappropriate in terms of his bigotry.
Mm-hmm.
He really wasn't the kind of person I think Americans would want to know was their president. He doesn't reflect the best values of the United States. But I think a lot of that was not shared with the American people in a timely way because of this pardon that you talked about at the beginning.
And Ford's pardon set the Watergate cover-up in concrete, and most Americans have never penetrated it. A lot of that information is available. We'll continue in just a moment. We'll go to the phones in the next segment, too. If you'd like to talk about the real record, the real history of Gerald R. Ford as president or prior to that in his service in Congress, give us a call. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We're talking with investigative journalist Robert Perry. Read his work at consortiumnews.com. This is the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Just arrived. Carmel, a treasure. A first combination calendar history book with souvenir maps archiving Carmel today. Entirely rendered in watercolors by Lisa Bryan, this brilliant calendar and book combo captures the charm of Carmel. A special gift now available at Lisa's studio in Court of the Fountains and other bookstores and gift shops in Carmel. For more information, call Lisa Bryan at 626-5435. 626-5435.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in Soquel Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Ray of frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, Soquel Drive and Porter Street in Soquel.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Back to the Nixon Ford years today on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox and Four Parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia.
That was before we even knew of a thing called rap or hip-hop. That's Gil Scott-Heron, circa 1969, 1970, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. And, of course, the pardon of Nixon by Gerald Ford did seal up some of that stuff so it never did get televised. We're talking with Robert Perry, investigative reporter. He writes at consortiumnews.com, and we're sharing what we consider to be the truth about President Gerald R. Ford, some of the elements that were omitted from the coverage this past week. Bob, I went into my political button collection, and I found one that says W-I-N on it. Do you know what those letters stood for?
Famous at the time, Whip Inflation Now.
Right. Yeah. Do you remember that speech that he gave?
Well, there were a number of speeches he gave. But he was, I think one has to give Ford credit, and one thing that wasn't really, I think, focused on enough during the during this period of tribute to him was the work he did on in dealing with energy independence. And I've always felt that the presidents of the 1970s didn't really get their due there, and then this is an area where they actually were much more constructive than some of the presidents we've had since then. The Nixon as well, and Ford, and of course Carter, made an effort to get the United States to retrofit, to be more conscious about conserving energy. And if you remember, one of the big selling points for the Reagan presidency was that we were past that. We could have fun again. People were tired of all that nagging about how they had to weather strip their houses and so forth.
Yeah, turn down the heat and clear your plate, Gerald Ford advised the nation.
Right. Well, it wasn't bad advice. I think one has to give him credit where credit is due, and I think that was an area that wasn't really focused on enough because it in a sense, the work that he did and Carter did, I think reflect to them very well compared to what Reagan did, and we really got off track in terms of trying to conserve energy, and we started becoming much more, again, wasteful.
Well, and it underscores how virulent a problem inflation was in the 1970s, and they were going to great lengths for, you know, photo op and PR efforts to deal with the problem. But it was a very serious erosion of the value of the dollar and the value of working for an hour. Let's go to the phones here. Barbara's on the line from Cave Creek. Hello, Barbara. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show with Robert Parry.
Hi. Thank you. I would like to mention that, well, first of all, there's a lot of information right now on Democracy Now, how he, Ford, supported the invasion of East Timor, where one-third of the population was killed by the Indonesians after he had a meeting with Ford.
Yeah, let's pause for a second. Let's recap the facts on that. And Bob, help me out here. But as I recall, Kissinger and Nixon were returning from Asia, and they stopped to refuel and visit the strongman in Jakarta. And was it Sukarno or Suharto?
Suharto.
And they essentially gave him approval to crack down on the rebels on East Timor. Is that right, Bob?
Well, I think Kissinger did. But then we're in the Ford administration, and I think there was a green light given, and it had these horrible consequences, as the caller suggests.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Go ahead, Barbara.
And I mean, according to these articles, Ford met with Suharto right before the invasion. Ford did, and also the other thing they were talking about was that he. There were a couple of gentlemen killed having to do with Pinochet, to protect Pinochet. One was an American, and one was...
Are you thinking of Orlando Letelier?
Yeah, I think so.
And Ronnie Moffat, the American woman, co-worker.
And there's a lot of information on Democracy Now! About it. But also, I disagree with his... I think Ford was more full of rhetoric as far as energy. I mean, the energy crisis was going on after the Yom Kippur War, and I think he was more rhetoric as opposed to Carter, who actually was taking some actions with using solar energy, et cetera, and made some goals. And he also gave AWACS to the Saudi Arabians and helped them militarily so we could get the oil prices down, as I recall.
I think that is correct, yeah. Barbara, thank you for your call today.
All right, thanks.
Good to hear from you. If you'd like to share some of your own truth about Gerald R. Ford, give us a call toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We're closing in on a break here, so we'll go ahead. And Robert Parry, stay with us. Robert's website is consortiumnews.com. And as we return, I want to dig deeper into the history of Gerald Ford prior to his appointment as vice president and then his rise up to president, and talk about his efforts to impeach Earl Warren. That's coming up next here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey in the old Granary building, just two blocks from the aquarium, or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
The Philly Sunshine Show.
Philly Sunshine Show.
With P-Lar. With P-Lar.
Sunday at 3 o'clock, we're going to be doing something new, something different, or we'll do the same old thing. Take your phone calls. One thing we know for sure, I'll have something to say. What? I don't know. I never know until I've said it. Find out what's the next thing to come out of my mouth.
The Philly Sunshine Show with P-Lar.
Sundays from 3 to 5. 3 to 5.
On AM 540. KRXA.
This is Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. As your licensed real estate broker, our mission at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors is excellence and contribution, and our only concern is to promote and protect your interests. Quite simply, if the best result for you means no deal for us, we will immediately tell you. Selling but concerned about tax consequences? As a CPA, I can advise you of the implications of any capital gain. Seeking income-producing property? With a Stanford engineering degree, I have developed cash flow analysis to evaluate various opportunities. If you're buying a home, my promise is to help you find your dream house under the most favorable terms. We at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors are dedicated to our community. We will contribute $250 out of every local transaction to the school of your choice. I am Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. Call me at 753-5310. That's 753-5310. Stop by 1271 North Davis Road in Salinas, across from Applebee's, or browse to prunetarealestate.com.
The healthcare system is broken. That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance, Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you've had the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 33 minutes past the hour. That's Mr. Acker Bilk on the clarinet. We're taking you back to the late 60s, 1970s, and taking an unvarnished look at the legacy of Gerald R. Ford, the late president, longest living ex-president, died at the age of 93, day after Christmas, and the subject of a lengthy taxpayer-funded retrospective and a memorial set of memorial services. Robert Perry is our guest, investigative journalist. Also, I recommend his book, Secrecy and Privilege, which touches on the origins of the Bush dynasty and takes you back. And, Bob, I got to watch part of the funeral services at the National Cathedral, but really didn't have the stomach to sit still for all of it. And I saw some of the clips on the news programs, and one of them struck me because Poppy Bush got up, and he actually cracked a joke that was kind of funny. He referenced the Gerald Ford, who was an athlete and generally regarded as a, you know, pretty physically sound guy, stumbled and fell, and that became the butt of a series of jokes that Chevy Chase launched his career on Saturday Night Live with. And then Bush 41 went into his own character and talked about being parodied or made fun of by Dana Carvey, and even dropped into Dana Carvey's lines about Bush Sr. It wouldn't be prudent. Don't want to do it. But in that same breath, he took a swipe at the so-called JFK conspiracy theorists and praised Gerald Ford for his work on the Warren Commission, which is generally viewed as the commission that whitewashed the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And yet he didn't mention the other connection to Earl Warren that Gerald Ford had. And in the early 1960s, the John Birch Society and other far-right elements in this country decided they wanted to impeach Earl Warren. They claimed he was a commie sympathizer, but I think it had to do more with desegregation. And they picked the minority leader, the great middle American from Michigan, to carry the bill of impeachment.
Well, it's certainly true that Gerald Ford was not always this the moderate that people make him out to be. He did play these multiple roles as a powerful Republican, someone who had ambitions. He was on the Warren Commission. He's one of the criticisms people make of him on that operation was that he was the person who changed through some editing the location of the bullet wound in Kennedy's back by changing the words. Ford moved it up to Kennedy's neck, and that's been one of the key questions as to whether the bullet could have penetrated through his neck and then caused the other wounds that the so-called magic bullet would have inflicted. It was one of the points that some of the Kennedy people that look into the assassination have always been critical of Ford about. And it's quite clear that Kennedy was shot more in the back, the upper back certainly, but not really the neck, as Ford suggested in his writing.
Mm-hmm. And what about the impeachment effort? Do you recall that?
Well, it's a bit before my time. I was, I came into Washington about 1977, So my experience really what I focus on in the articles at Consortium News relate more to the time around Watergate, which is when I start the book, and how Ford altered his approach toward government as the presidential campaign got going. Initially, Ford did sort of clear the decks of some of the Nixon loyalists, including George H.W. Bush, who was sent off to China to be the emissary. He had been Nixon's one of his chief defenders as the chairman of the Republican National Committee.
Right.
But then as the Reagan campaign begins to get shape and gain momentum in late 75 and going into 76, Ford begins to start making some major concessions to the right, including essentially abandoning the concept of détente, which was at the time in the mid-70s, people forget now, that it was understood that the Cold War was basically over, that the people were talking about the post-Cold War period at that time. The Soviet Union was seen in essentially in decline for its technological and economic weaknesses. And Nixon and Kissinger had put forward this idea you could negotiate away much of the dangers of the Cold War anyway, and they called it détente. And as the pressure grew on the right, however, in the Republican primaries, Ford banned the word détente in the White House. And he also began making other concessions, key concessions to the right. In particular, he and George H.W. Bush, who in 1976 had become CIA director, compromised the CIA's analytical division in a crucial way. They allow in this team called Team B, and this Team B were old-line Cold Warriors and some young neoconservatives, people like Paul Wolfowitz. And they come in and they essentially challenged the CIA and on its very tempered view of the Soviet Union, and they pushed this idea that the Soviet Union is a rising economic military power with great technology and can do all these things. Essentially, they exaggerate the threat from the Soviet Union, and that occurrence begins a couple of very dangerous momentums for the United States at that time. You have one, the idea that we have to build up our military to counter this force that really wasn't really there, this great danger. And secondly, the CIA analytical division was broken down over the next decade or so when it stopped telling the truth. Before then, the CIA analysts tried to get things right, but they came under such pressure from after Team B and then in the early Reagan years that the CIA analysts were being purged for saying the Soviet Union's in decline. Its economy is terrible. Its military is not what it's cracked up to be. And if a CIA analyst came out with that, they would be punished and pushed aside. So you ended up, by the end of the 1980s, when the Soviet Union finally collapsed, that everyone could see, people accused the CIA of missing it. But really the problem of that systemic failure of the agency goes back to Gerald Ford in 1976 and what he and George H.W. Bush did to the analytical division.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think is fascinating is his relationship with Kissinger, who was permitted to eulogize him the other day and served as an honorary pallbearer. And it's interesting in a number of ways because, as I recall, Kissinger had buffaloed Nixon into giving him the two top posts, Secretary of State and National Security Advisor. And if I remember correctly, Ford busted him down to just one of those jobs. He kept him on as Secretary of State.
Right.
And, of course, Kissinger continued some of his dark work. The fall of Saigon occurred during Ford's watch, and that was kind of washed away as just happened. You know, mistakes were made, at least in the reminiscences this week. And also, nobody bothered to mention the very sordid record of Henry Kissinger.
Right, and there you go back also to one of the pressures in 1976. Especially after Ford finally secures the Republican nomination against Reagan, he then is facing Carter for the general election. And one of the messages that he and Bush again share is this idea that the CIA must be gotten off the front page. Because if you remember...
The Church Commission?
At the time, you had the Church Commission, the Pike Commission. You had these disclosures of serious abuses by the CIA, both domestically and overseas. And one of the problems was focused on Chile, the CIA's efforts to destabilize the Allende government in the early 70s, which led to the coup in 73, which puts Pinochet in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And Pinochet is this ruthless dictator who becomes essentially an international terrorist. He organizes something called Operation Condor with other military governments in South America, and they go across people's borders into other countries, and they murder their opponents. And they were doing this in Europe, and they were doing this elsewhere in South America. And in the summer of 1976, they have a plan to do it in the United States, where they go after Orlando Letelier, who had been the foreign minister. And this terrorist plot is hatched. The CIA is essentially given a lot of evidence about it, but Bush and his team do nothing. They essentially look the other way as it occurs. Letelier is blown up in his car as he's driving down Massachusetts Avenue in Washington, D.C., and his co-worker, Ronnie Moffitt, is killed, and her husband is injured in this terrorist attack. It was the worst terrorist attack in American history at that time in terms of international terrorism. And essentially, under Ford's watch, under Bush's watch, the killing is covered up. They don't want this to get on the front pages as an act of murder carried out by a government that the U.S. had effectively put into power in Chile. So Bush tries to send the investigators off in the wrong directions, denies that there's any connection to Chile. Their story is planted in Newsweek and Washington Post, New York Times, and other major publications saying the Chilean government was innocent. When, in fact, there was evidence sitting in the CIA's files, we now know, including the photograph of the guy who was the chief assassin, Michael Townley. So, again, this was a case where the politics was put above what was right for the country and what was simply right for justice in this case.
Mm-hmm.
Ford was able to close the gap with Carter, having kept a lot of these things quiet. They also suppressed the Pike Commission report. If you remember, Pike was a congressman from New York who'd prepared a report about CIA abuses. Ford and Bush led the way to suppress that report, and successfully did so.
Mm-hmm.
So they were trying to sort of turn the tide of reform. There had been an effort to reform the CIA to sort of get control of the imperial presidency, and as Ford's presidency moved on into the late 75-76 period, there was a much more aggressive effort on his part and many of his top officials, including his two chiefs of staff, first Donald Rumsfeld, and then Dick Cheney, to push back aggressively against efforts to impose these reforms.
Mm-hmm.
And that also set in motion a dynamic that has continued with us today, and with some of the same people carrying out the same positions. Rumsfeld and Cheney, of course, went on to have important roles in this presidency.
Well, and the healing has just continued since Ford, hasn't it?
Right. So basically what we didn't really learn the lessons. And the lessons were that there has to be a limitation in a constitutional system. There have to be real limitations on the power of the executive. And the opportunity was there in the 70s.
Well, we learned that lesson, and the FISA law was passed as one of the lessons learned from the excesses of the Nixon years. But it is those individuals you named, Cheney and Rumsfeld in particular, who have been determined to re-expand presidential powers, and they've done it in a remarkable way in just a six-year period.
Yes, it's been incredible. You also see in the other missing link in this whole thing has been, of course, Iran-Contra, which I covered extensively for AP and Newsweek. But Iran-Contra was another chance. That was a case of the Reagan administration working with Bush, of course, as vice president, in trying to again expand the powers of the presidency, do things undercover. The laws might be passed to say you can't do it, but then do it anyway. And they got caught finally in '86. But instead of seeing it through, again, there was an effort to fight back. And one of the leaders of that pushback was again Dick Cheney, who was on the Iran-Contra investigation in Congress, and essentially worked to set up in the minority report on Iran-Contra much of the rationalization for this all-powerful presidency that we saw take flower again when George W. Bush became president.
Well, and just the most recent insult is that the president can open your mail. And it took a signing statement, not any act of Congress, to institute that new little special privilege. And we're all safer for it. We'll continue in just a moment. Robert Parry, my guest. Read his work at consortiumnews.com. And we'll go to the phones in the next segment if you'd like to talk with us. The truth about Gerald Ford, go ahead and share it. 888-5-PETER-B. This is the Peter B. Collins Show.
Every day is an endless train. You got to ride it to the end of the line. Be a troubleshooter, blow the bad luck away, and you will make it to your station on time. And you'll find out every trick in the book, and that there's only one way to get things done. You'll find out the only way to the top is looking out for number one. I mean, you keep...
You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Step Talk Uncensored is a new talk show where we speak openly about the deadly, shame-based disease of alcoholism and addictions. In this country, most of us are affected in some way. Causes and cures, genetics or willpower. Saturday, 4 to 5 with Sheila Gale, brought to you in part by Myrick Photographic in Monterey. Go to myrickphoto.com and get your holiday cards online. Saturdays at 4 with Sheila on KRXA. 12 Step Talk Uncensored. It's about time.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 AM from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech. You have the right to worship as you choose. And when you disagree with Billy Sunshine, you have the right to be wrong.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM. Tune in Sundays 3 to 5.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 10 minutes away from the hour. We're talking about the true legacy of President Gerald Ford. And it gives me an opportunity to dip into the Peter B. Collins tax-deductible music archives. Some of my favorite tunes from the 70s.
Take it home, babe. I've been thinking about you, babe, my one desire. Wrap my arms around you, close to me. Oh, babe, I want to taste your lips, I want to be a fantasy. Yeah.
And the one right before the break was Looking Out for Number One by Bachman Turner Overdrive, Canadian band, if you remember them. We continue with Robert Perry. You can read his work at consortiumnews.com. And let's see, John is on the line from Carmel Valley. John, thanks for holding. Go right ahead.
Yes, I missed the first part of Robert Perry's discussion, and I'm wondering whether he brought up an incident that's extremely unknown and should be more known, and that's Ford's granting of aid to the Indonesians to put down uprisings in East Timor.
We did talk about that.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Was the number of people that were probably killed in that mentioned?
Well, the figure I've heard is around 200,000.
Yeah, that's not a big place.
Right.
East Timor is part of the Indonesian island group, but mm-hmm. the place itself, that's a staggering number. Another point about that whole era of Nixon, Ford, and what they tried to do about inflation and about energy use, so different from now. That 55-mile-an-hour speed limit that we had for over 20 years was part of the Nixon era.
It was, yeah.
And that was the first thing, if I recall correctly, that new bunch of ultra-right-wing congressmen were determined and did do in 94 when the Republicans took back the Congress. First thing they did, above anything else, was to get rid of that 55-mile-an-hour speed limit,
mm-hmm.
which really probably, I'm guessing, if someone else thinks of something that was more effective than that about conserving gasoline and tire use, because one of the great polluters that's not often mention is the wear and tear on your tires, which gets progressively higher by far as you go faster. There's a lot of pollutants that go up into the atmosphere from rubber.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hardly ever mentioned. Well, that, just imagine the amount of stuff that's gone into the atmosphere in our society since that speed limit was reduced. That's contributed to global warming, that's contributing to asthma and sooty atmospheres in cities and wherever there's lots of traffic.
Well, and it's fair to say that, you know, Nixon was the guy who signed the legislation permitting Earth Day and launching the Environmental Protection Agency. So it is a mixed bag back there.
Plus, amazingly, there was a period there where his administration was seriously studying. Can you imagine this? This sounds beyond belief, but it actually happened. They were considering national wage and price controls to try to get a grip on runaway inflation.
Well, Nixon, wait, John. Nixon did that. My salary, I was working at a radio station in Chicago, and it was frozen for a year and a half. So that did actually occur. It was ineffective, and inflation was not, evidently slowed by it. But that tactic actually was employed. Bob Perry, a comment?
Well, yeah, that's true. It did, inflation, of course, was being driven a lot during that period by the energy costs. We started seeing for the first time the arrival of the OPEC cartels and the effort to, on the part of the people of the oil-producing regions, to get more for their product, I mean, more for their resources. And it was really the first time that Americans had to adjust to that. And I do think you have to give credit to Nixon, Ford, and Carter for trying, not always effectively, but making efforts to deal with that, what became an emerging crisis for the nation. I remember Jimmy Carter referred to it as the moral equivalent of war,
mm-hmm.
and was made fun of.
For his malaise speech.
Right, because mm-hmm. he was talking about the need to really address energy and energy independence at that
mm-hmm.
time.
Some people thought that's how they pronounce mayonnaise in Georgia. Thanks for your call, John. Now to Joe in Mesa, Arizona. Welcome, you're on the air.
Thank you, Peter B. A very interesting show. Something that I heard that you were speaking about earlier, the comments that Herbert Walker Bush made at the funeral the other day regarding the Kennedy assassination with Gerald Ford's involvement with the Warren Commission, it brought to mind, first thing I thought of was, why would he bring such a thing up? And then I remembered in 91, I believe, that he made a campaign speech when he was running against Clinton, where he mentioned something about people playing the game of who shot Johnny. And even at that time, I was wondering, why does he have to bring that up? What is his preoccupation with that? And then I'm reading that...
Well, wasn't he in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963?
Yeah, and I guess he was in the CIA, and I was in second grade then. And I was just wondering if your guest could shed some light on that, because I find that kind of interesting, and
All right.
I really would like to be hearing more about that.
Bob, what do you know?
In the general media.
Well, I really don't know much about what George H.W. Bush was doing at that time. He was, you know, he was the person who came out of Skull and Bones time, and he was obviously a person who was bred with secrets, and his father was involved, implicated in some of the trading with the enemy, with Nazi Germany. So there's this dark history of the Bush family, which continues on into the time when he's at the CIA. Not only does he help protect he helps cover up the Letelier assassination, but also in 76, people haven't mentioned that was the year the Argentine colonels took over in Argentina
mm-hmm.
and launched another bloody death squad operation, which claimed about 30,000 lives. And brought the word disappearance into our lexicon.
And much of that violence can be traced back, at least in part, to the School of the Americas at Fort Benning, Georgia.
So much of this stuff was going on, this very dark history. And Ford, while one can credit him in some ways with perhaps being a milder figure, someone who didn't try to whip up the angers that we saw around the Nixon period, he really didn't address these problems very seriously, and in many cases ended up adding to them.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for the call, Joe. Just 20 seconds or so. Did you think that Gerald Ford was his own man as President of the United States?
Well, I think he was to some degree, but like everybody who gets into that level, there are a lot of people trying to manipulate you and control you. I don't think Ford was such a strong personality that he could have overcome that.
Yeah. Robert Perry, ConsortiumNews.com. Thanks for spending this hour with us.
Thank you, Peter.
Appreciate hearing the truth about Gerald R. Ford. Coming up next, Larissa Alexandrovna talks about Bush's shuffle of the generals in Negroponte.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Ropp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. New details on a troop surge for Iraq.
The plan is known as 5 plus 2. Five Army brigades into Baghdad, plus two Marine battalions into western Iraq.
Weird weather in the east, wild weather in the south.
Looks like it's going to be a holiday for tree trimmers around here.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. National Security Correspondent David Martin has new details on the plan for beefing up American forces in Iraq.
CBS News has learned Defense Secretary Robert Gates has recommended the president order an immediate buildup of 10,000 U.S. troops in Iraq, plus an option of doubling that to 20,000 by next spring.
What would the troops do? One of the plan's architects is retired Army General Jack Keane.
We have never had a strategy to defeat the insurgency. And if we had a strategy to defeat the insurgency, then the number one military objective would have been protect and support the population. And that is what this plan is all about.
It calls for a long-term troop presence.
What is different is you bring in a 24/7 force, and they stay in those neighborhoods, and they do not go back to their bases. They stay in the neighborhoods, and that force is U.S. and Iraqi.
They have to stay for a year and a half. The new majority leaders in Congress have launched a preemptive strike. CBS News correspondent John Harchie has that.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid fired off a letter to President Bush urging him not to opt for a surge of more U.S. troops in Iraq, saying the solution there will be political, not military.
This is enough. The American people have had enough.
Reid says President Bush appears to be changing commanders in Iraq because they didn't agree with the value of more troops.
The president needs to hear from people who tell him something that he needs to hear, not what he wants to hear.
And Reid says the Democratic-controlled Congress will hold hearings on Iraq policy. John Harchie, CBS News, Washington.
The Pentagon confirms that the top U.S. general in Iraq, George Casey, will become Army Chief of Staff, and General John Abizaid, the head of Central Command, will retire. Now this.
Now you can dial a diamond and save half by calling Empire Diamond at 1-800-SAVE-HALF. If you're in the market for a solitaire, engagement ring, anniversary, or investment diamond, then shop around, get the best price, and then dial a diamond at 1-800-SAVE-HALF. Empire will advise you on size, shapes, and values. They'll sell you diamonds directly from the source without a middleman's markup. These diamonds are guaranteed to be priced at half the retail price. A diamond certification by the Gemological Institute of America will be faxed or mailed to you. For qualified buyers, your diamond will be sent to your home or office for a free 10-day no-obligation inspection. Upon your satisfaction, you then pay for your purchase and get a 60-day money-back guarantee. Empire Diamond, located in the Empire State Building for over half a century, guarantees the lowest-priced diamonds, 10-day free inspection, and money-back guarantee. Save over half on your diamonds. Call 1-800-SAVE-HALF. That's 1-800-SAVE-HALF. Visit us at dialadiamond.com.
Weather extremes are the story across much of the country. In the southeast, severe storms. Outside a school in Liberty, South Carolina today, sudden high wind piled vehicles on top of each other, injuring 15 people. Craig Beatty of CBS television affiliate WSPA went to the scene.
There was a cluster of cars just mangled together
a Ford Explorer, in fact, was overturned sitting in the bed of a pickup truck that was in front of it.
Many trees came down in the Atlanta area today. Reporter Pete Combs surveyed the damage.
In this cul-de-sac in a neighborhood in McDonough, Georgia, almost every single house has been somehow blasted by this storm. For instance, one house has two trees lying on top of the house. Another house has a porch that's been splintered by trees knocked down by this fierce wind. A trampoline is in the trees 20 feet up off the ground.
Strong wind is also the story on the West Coast. Carol Tucker is a spokeswoman for the Los Angeles Water and Power Department.
We have reports of downed power lines and poles knocked down and tree branches hitting into power lines.
The third winter storm in as many weeks is clobbering parts of Colorado. Denver has up to 8 inches of new snow. While in the east, CBS News correspondent Dave Barrett reports it might as well be spring.
Early January and no snow in New York or Philadelphia?
When was the last time this happened? The answer, never.
At least since they began keeping records, says CBS meteorologist George Cullen. Golfers were out in Chicago, cherry blossoms blooming in D.C., and upstate New York, some maple syrup producers are tapping trees weeks ahead of schedule. Sap man Charles Emerson cautions, with all the warm weather,
you may not have a good quality product, or also there may be a very limited amount of the product that you can produce just because of the weather.
Emerson's been making maple syrup for 40 years. Dave Barrett, CBS News.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
My name is Leslie, and I've been smoke-free for 6.5 months.
Quitting smoking is hard, but millions of people have succeeded.
My name is Brad, and I've been smoke-free for 15 months now.
If you decide to quit smoking, visit Quit Assist, a free resource that links you to a wealth of expert quitting information, including websites, guides, quit lines, and more. It could help you find your own way to success.
My name is Etta, and I have been smoke-free for 4 years.
Quit Assist, a free information resource. Log on at philipmorrisusa.com.
The following is a paid commercial message.
It's estimated that over 200 million people in the U.S. suffer from herpes-caused cold sores. There are many products on the market today. Relieve One-Day Cold Sores Symptom Treatment is excellent because it relieves cold sore symptoms in just a day. Pain eases in minutes and other symptoms resolve in just 24 hours. Relieve is non-toxic, comprised of botanical extracts, and is 100% guaranteed. Millions of sufferers have found that Relieve works best for them. Only you can determine that Relieve is best for you. You can now buy Relieve at most...
You've got the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 6 minutes after the hour. Coming up in about 30 minutes, Professor Bo Grosskopf talks about his new book called Strategic Terror, and we ask the question, is aerial warfare a form of terrorism? But first, our first presentation of the new year from Larissa Alexandrovna. She's the managing news editor at RawStory.com. And Larissa, welcome to our program here in the new year.
Thanks for having me. Happy New Year.
Well, same to you. And it was really a week ago today that the story was breaking that in Baghdad, Saddam had been turned over by the U.S. captors to the authorities who claim to be in charge of the Maliki government there.
And right, exactly. And 24 hours he was executed, and right at the start of a high Muslim holiday, and a very holy holiday, and it was a disaster. But at the time, as I saw this developing, it sort of fit with my concerns that, you know, what I had already heard was that there was going to be a troop escalation in Iraq, that this whole nonsense about taking the winter off to think about it was just that, nonsense. And as soon as, you know, I saw that, or I didn't actually watch it, but as soon as I saw these things developing, I became very concerned, because to me it appeared to be something that was going to justify the surge of the troops because of the fallout from the execution. And we've learned since that there was unauthorized release of footage that Saddam Hussein was executed by Shia, possibly high-level Shia folks. So So it's certainly fueling a lot of tension in the region.
Well, there are a couple of things about it. First of all, your analysis there is interesting, and I had not heard that before, that by permitting this execution to occur at this time, that the fairly predictable reaction of the Sunnis, who now claim Saddam as a martyr, would create the surge in violence. I mean, as if we need a surge to suggest that there needs to be a new policy.
Right.
But I had not thought of that, and that's a very interesting scenario.
Well, I mean, I had known we were going to do a surge anyway, but I couldn't wrap my brain around why. Listen, Shia or Sunni, the fact is they all observe the Hajj and the day, you know, the night before
the Eid holiday.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's the night before, and so to kill a fellow Muslim on that, I found it really bizarre. The fact that there were cameras permitted, or cell phones rather, with cameras in them. The fact that the footage was released to the press without the Pentagon, as the Pentagon supposedly confiscated all of the cameras as people went in. So as this was being leaked out, I'm just curious where the Pentagon was. Again, there was, you know, our government was largely silent. The Pentagon was largely silent until it was, you know, after our own New Year's. Did we hear the president say anything, you know, even remotely condemning the way it was done, other than to say it was, you know, just. But really, there was nobody on our side reacting, saying, no, this footage is inappropriate, you know, aggressively pursuing it. It was a controlled leak. It was, in my opinion, a controlled leak.
And Larissa, what sticks with me over the last few days is I've watched the president and various reporters from Iraq, including John Burns from the New York Times, dance around the central issue of the legitimacy of the execution.
Right.
And they've decried the manner, the tone, the taunts, the fact that it was videotaped. But they, you know, ignore the fundamental question of whether the trial was fair, whether the death warrant was properly issued.
Well,
and
right. It wasn't signed by the president. It wasn't, what's it called? First of all, the whole thing, as you say, the trial itself should have not, the occupying force has no right to, you know, conduct this sort of monkey trial.
Mm-hmm.
This should have been at The Hague to begin with. You know, the second issue is he's convicted of 148 deaths, I believe. That's what he was convicted of. And in that case, the people that he killed were plotting to assassinate him. So he signed death warrants. I'm just curious. I know for a fact, as you do, as many people do, that he gassed the Kurds. Why was he not sentenced on, or rather convicted on those charges?
Well, because that would have potentially exposed U.S. complicity.
Exactly. So here's the, you have the problem. You have a mockery of a trial when, in fact, justice would be to present what had happened and try all of the people involved. Then you have an execution that didn't, you know, according to the judge, the presiding judge, was not in accordance with Iraqi law. According to the Sunni clerics, was not in accordance, you know, with Muslim procedure.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you have again no involvement of you know, the international community. You have the occupying force hosting the event, if you will, and taking the cell phones and all of this and transporting the dead body once it was, you know, once he was executed. You know, it's all very, to say the least, inappropriate.
Well, and we have, we believe, it's Zalmay Khalilzad, who is set now to be replacing John Bolton at the United Nations, but
right.
he's the current ambassador to Baghdad. And there have been all these unnamed top official quotes in the newspaper over the last few days, quibbling about the manner in which it was done, talking about how he, the unnamed U.S. official, tried to talk the Maliki government into delaying the execution, partly over the legal issues and partly over the timing. And so the...
You know, we had custody of the prisoner.
Yeah.
If we really thought it was a bad idea, if we really believed it was against our own national security, because obviously it's going to create a firestorm, and it's starting to. It really, it's actually even creating copycat suicides. We did not have to release the prisoner. We could have said this is, you know, being done inappropriately. It's being done illegally. To say that we didn't want to interfere because they're, you know, their own country, well, we've interfered in all sorts of ways. They've arrested people that we've destroyed. Did you hear about that story where we, a bunch of military folks from Britain and the U.S. destroyed an entire building to get a guy out who was in prison for fraud, one of our guys?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In Baghdad?
We interfere whenever we want to, but when... It comes to something that really we should, by law, not allow, and that is a public lynching. We suddenly don't want, you know, we can't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is that you're right, you know, and we did have custody of the person.
Well, we flew him from Camp Cropper to the execution site in a helicopter.
Right.
And we flew the executioners, apparently some of them at least, in that helicopter. And then the same chopper, after Saddam had been killed,
right.
Was used to return the body and bring the execution party back. And it's reported that when they got off the helicopter, I guess in the green zone at Camp Cropper, they stood around one guy and watched him replay the execution either on his cell phone or on a little video cam.
Right. I mean, to say that we, you know, no one could have imagined again, you know, is nonsense. I mean, this much incompetence, in my opinion, is starting to look far too competent to me.
Hmm.
And I couldn't understand why they would push this at this time. It just made no sense to me. And then it sort of clicked as I saw, you know, as I see things developing with the carrier movements and the Pentagon actually admitting that, yes, we are building up in the region, but only to send a warning, you know, suddenly it made sense, at least to me, and that is, and certainly some other folks I've talked to have said, you know, similar things, and that is, you know, you need to, if you want to put more troops into the region, you're going to need to come, you know, a reason. And if there's a huge escalation of violence, it's, let's say, seeping out into friendly territory, then you can argue that the troop increase is temporary and just to support our, you know, friends in the region, not, you know, necessarily to handle things in Iraq directly, which is what I suspect is going to be said. But, you know, that's how I see the execution. Now, I may be proved wrong, but right now I can't figure out any other reason why this was done the way it was done.
Yeah. We're going to take a break and return with Larissa Alexandrovna. If you want to talk about the Saddam execution, the snuff films that have been circulating on the Internet, the copycat kids have attempted hangings and at least one child has died. You can call us now, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, kick off your new year by listening to one of the top experts on investing in real estate, James Ross. He's president and founder of National Real Estate Holdings and will be on the show sharing his strategies on how to build your wealth through real estate investments. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
I am attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am attorney Sean Mills.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake Elistero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
I'm Pam.
And I'm Nancy.
And we're from the Potting Shed.
In Aptos. We're located at 5752 Freedom Boulevard.
About 2 miles east of Highway 1 heading towards Watsonville. You have to look for us. We're in an old barn, but if you look for our mailbox, it's painted bright yellow and it's shaped like an old barn, so it makes it a little bit easier to find.
The barn has a lot of charm. People tend to come there just because the atmosphere is really nice.
And they'll come and have a cup of tea, bring their dog if they have one. All the dogs who visit know exactly where the cookie jar is. So it's that kind of a place. People feel very comfortable.
When we started, we were just strictly a garden shop with pots and plants, but we had to evolve through the years because nobody needed pots and plants in the middle of winter. So we started adding things, and now it's a full-fledged gift shop.
We work very hard to try and find things that are unusual and eclectic and well-priced. That's what our customers want. We're open from 10 to 5, Wednesday through Sunday. Come by, have a cup of tea. The Potting Shed.
Here's your latest traffic for the Monterey Bay Area. First in Hollister, Highway 25, south of Best Road. It's an accident. A van went off the roadway and through a fence. CHP is on the scene. San Benito County, southbound 101 at Cole Road, an accident. An SUV went off the roadway and is on its side in a ditch. Salinas Highland Avenue at El Rancho Way, an accident on the right shoulder. A big rig and a car are involved in that recent accident. Road construction, Soquel Avenue in Santa Cruz between Seabright Avenue and Parkway. There will be paving work 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. today and possibly tomorrow on Saturday. The work will involve lane closures and detours and will interrupt bus routes along Soquel Drive. Traffic is brought to you by Open from American Express. Open, how American Express serves small business. To learn more, visit open.com or call 800-NOW-OPEN. I'm Michael Kidd for KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I'm still your humble host, Peter B. We're talking with Larissa Alexandrovna, managing news editor at rawstory.com. She blogs on the web at largely.com. Coming up about 10 minutes from now, Professor Bo Grosskopf is going to talk with us about his new book, Strategic Terror. Is aerial bombardment a form of terrorism? We'll ask the professor. I think I know what he's going to say. Ah, Saddam's execution just one stop on the road to hell. And, Larissa, you referenced this a few minutes ago, but there have been some bizarre copycat attempts at hangings, apparently inspired or driven by the videos on the Internet.
Well, and on television, too. I mean, all of the networks carried at least, you know, one form of the footage. You know, some of them didn't go all the way to the breaking of the neck, but they certainly showed the noose and the masked executioners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, essentially they were, it's a snuff film.
Yes,
this
it is.
What happens when you show a snuff film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got actually three children now. One in Texas, and I believe one's in Pakistan, and I don't remember where the third one is.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually succeeded in killing themselves.
So they were fatalities. I thought a couple of them were misguided attempts.
Well, maybe there are others, but the three that I was reading about were in fact fatalities.
And, mm-hmm.
But what do you know? This is what I don't understand. The people who scream the loudest about, you know, Janet Jackson's wardrobe malfunction is somehow being, you know, this heinous thing that's going to affect our children and blah, blah, blah.
A nipple was exposed for 9/16 of a second.
Well, you know, I don't remember seeing it. Even after they replayed it, I couldn't see it. Now, but here you have Fox News showing the whole thing from the execution beginning to end, and this is somehow okay, you know?
Well, and again, nobody asked the question of whether execution in general is okay or whether this one was, properly executed, if you'll pardon that pun. Don in Monterey, join us here on the Peter B. Collins Show with Larissa.
Good afternoon. I agree with your speaker wholeheartedly, especially about Bush and them being very incompetent. And them showing that their incompetence is actually, I believe, one of their tactics. To mislead us and basically send us down the wrong path. This troop surge thing is just a joke. I just see our people are going to be hurt. When you talk to military planners, the biggest thing they want to do is send in right now like 150,000, and they want to secure our borders, close the borders off for the insurgencies to come in. But once you also close them off, you also trap them in there. Then you can move into Baghdad and start taking control and hopefully get our people out of there, because this whole fiasco has just been a joke since day one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Larissa, any reaction?
Well, no, I agree. It's been a fiasco from day one, and I think that, you know, even if, let's say, by some miracle, Congress does not allow any more funding of this fiasco, I have a very strong suspicion that a lot of the missing billions are somewhere in a discretionary fund to be used, for these to continue the war or whatever else they want to do, because really Congress has only the purse strings through which to control this mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
That is, unless they undertake impeachment, which they're not going to do. So.
Well, and breaking news this afternoon, Democrats have sent a letter to the White House cautioning the president not to go through with this plan for a surge, and citing military and other credible opinions about why this is a mistaken notion.
Even Trent Lott is skeptical, and you know, when you find yourself agreeing with someone like Trent Lott,
yeah,
then you know these guys have gone so far off the reservation that they're in another country altogether.
Travis in Phoenix, thanks for your call. You're on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yes, good afternoon. I was calling just to ask the guest if she had any opinions about a question I have, and basically, the question is, I'm just perplexed and baffled by the amount of Americans who seem to have faith and support the current Bush administration. I listen to C-SPAN every morning I get up just to see what's going on, and the amount of people who call in and express the sentiment that we should trust Bush and so on is just perplexing. I don't know if it's the degree of nationalism, if it's the degree of historical ignorance, but, being a young African-American male, I hardly find it incredible to believe that our government sometimes or historically has acted out of the interest of American citizens. So to me, that's not a large stretch or a leap of logic. But some people, that seems to be completely out of the realm of believability.
All right. Larissa?
Well, I think, you know, I think what you're hearing when you hear C-SPAN is they try to get both sides. So they always try to take calls, you know, one for this side, one for that side, and then they have an independent line. But the reality is that the polls and certainly the election show that the majority of the public, I mean, a mere 80%, do not trust this, you know, the way we're heading, do not approve of this war or the handling of it. And then you always have the fringe, you know, the psychotics or whatever, you know, whether they're fascists or, you know, moral value crowd, I don't know what to call them, but there's always that fringe right-wing extremist element in all societies. And who's to say that some of these people calling in aren't being paid to do so, you know? I've often wondered. I mean, seriously, yeah. When you have Trent Lott...
Oh, we got to put the politics aside and get down to some work for our folks. Larissa, thanks for joining us today. We'll talk to you next week, and I want to talk about the shuffle at the general level and also the move of Negroponte to a lower position over at State. Thanks.
Well, then I'll have more news for you.
Great. Next week with Larissa here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Could any of us do it? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Let's take a moment to talk about Wesley Autry, who this week was awarded New York City's Bronze Medallion by Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Mr. Autry is the construction worker and Navy veteran who was walking through the turnstile to catch the downtown local at 137th Street and Broadway Tuesday afternoon with his two daughters, ages 4 and 6, when a young man standing on the platform went into a seizure and fell onto the tracks as the number one train was coming. And Wesley Autry, with his daughters standing on the platform, turned into Jack Bauer. He jumped onto the tracks, tried to wrestle the young man away. When that didn't work, lay on top of him in the drainage trough between the electrified rails as the train passed over them both, leaving grease spots on Wesley Autry's cap. They ended up under the fifth car, at which point Autry yelled to his daughters that he was all right, and the passengers broke into applause. The difference between heroism and recklessness turned out to be about 2 inches. Afterward, he said that the real heroes are in Iraq, and he just did something we should all do. Just the same, he's been dubbed the Hero of Harlem, Donald Trump is giving him $10,000, and the New York Film Academy will set up a scholarship for his girls. The young man he saved, as it turns out, was a film student there, who now has a heck of a plot for a senior project. Would you do that? Leave your own kids behind to save somebody else? He hadn't been trained to jump between subway tracks, and nobody would have criticized him if he'd just stayed put. It tells you that maybe there's some heroism programmed into every one of us, if we're brave enough.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging. And the fastest way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's spam, firewalls, and web filters. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now and ask for your free trial. Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use. That's why over 35,000 leading companies are using the award-winning firewall. Try a Barracuda firewall for free. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
It's tax time again. And there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund as soon as you need it. In 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, the choice is yours. The personnel at Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax return tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today, located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just 2 blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to take a copy of your 2005 federal and California returns and W-2 1099 info for 2006. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today at 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville. We continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show. 33 minutes past the hour. Go ahead. Climb into your flight suit, and if you're Bush, add a codpiece. Strap on your helmet, climb into that fighter plane, and gosh, it's like a video game or a Tom Cruise movie. Or is it? This half hour, we're going to talk about the issues raised in a new book called Strategic Terror, The Politics and Ethics of Aerial Bombardment. Returning to our program, Professor Bo Groskopf. He's a professor of international relations at California State University, Chico, and he's made a special study of terrorism. He's the author of Newest Explosions of Terrorism, now in its fourth edition, and that's in addition to the new title, Strategic Terror. Professor, welcome back to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Good afternoon, Peter.
Nice to talk with you again. And you mentioned when we spoke a few weeks back that your new book was coming out, and you were kind enough to follow through and send us a copy. I thank you.
You're welcome.
Tell me how long you've been working on your analysis and theories about aerial warfare and its true meaning, its true role.
Actually, I first started researching it right after September 11th and the bombing of Afghanistan, and wrote an essay that I presented at a conference, and then said, you know what, and my publisher decided that, yes, it should be book length. So that's been about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And just, you know, in simple terms, what would you say is your thesis, that aerial warfare is, in fact, a form of terrorism that permits the attacker to essentially inflict incredible damage, often on civilians, and, you know, reduce the risk to the attacking party?
Well, actually, it's not my thesis, although I happen to agree with what you said. The thesis comes from what they're called the four prophets who, in the convergence with the end of World War I and then the advent of the age of aviation, asked the question, can air power win wars alone? And their answer was emphatically yes. And this, by the way, these four prophets, as they became known, included Billy Mitchell, the godfather of our own Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
It's called strategic bombing theory, which basically says that, you know, that the way you win wars from the air is you bomb the civilian centers of the enemy, you create a flood of refugees who go to the next city, you bomb that, and then you create another bigger flood of refugees who go to the next city and you bomb that, and eventually, because they are civilians, meaning women and children, who it's alleged, or at least assumed by the four prophets and lots of other military strategists, that women and children don't have the same will to resist as does the warrior class, why they will eventually force the government to sue for peace.
Mm-hmm.
That's the theory, and as I watched and listened to the advocates of shock and awe from January through March of 2003, and I simply said, you know, this is simply a restatement. I did a little research and found, in fact, that the theory of rapid dominance, which is what shock and awe is really about, it's the official name, is nothing but a reformulation of the original theory of strategic bombing.
Well, and in your book, you talk about the way language has been shifted to euphemize the actual impact. You write, military jargon meant to disguise unwelcome realities dominated military command briefings and media presentations of the invasion. The War of Liberation was a, quote, showdown with Saddam, in which, quote, coalition forces conducted, quote, precise and surgical incursions against, quote, pockets of resistance to, quote, break the hornet's nest. And I think those quotes are important as I read this because people need to understand that much of this language is massaged and intended to distract us from what's actually going on.
Yes, I mean, it's part of what I call the labyrinth of rationalizations, which I think is one of the major contributions of the book, Peter, which is to talk about a whole series of rationalizations that are used and techniques that are used. One, massaging, the language you use, the massaging of language to objectify the enemy and to excuse or really to dodge the terrorism label when you use air power. And the problem with that is that air power has become the weapon of choice for the modern industrial, post-industrial societies. Just as an example, part of their language, you know, the concept of collateral damage is something that is just accepted. Well, there's always going to be collateral damage when you bomb. And the new language actually is regrettable, attributed byproducts of the war on terror is the new language that they use to describe what used to be called collateral damage. And, you know, I mean, it's very clear to me that if anybody talked about the Israeli victims of Hezbollah, or if anybody talked about the 9/11 victims of the attackers as regrettable attributed byproducts of the war on terrorism, or even collateral damage, then people would be outraged. But that's become the norm. That's become simple accepted language. And of course, what it does is simply objectify and make invisible the victims of what allegedly is the use of clean warfare. Well, it's very clean for those top guns who are dropping their bombs from thousands of feet above the earth, but it's very dirty, as we saw this summer in Lebanon. It's very dirty on the ground.
Bo Grosskopf is with us. His new book is out, and it's called Strategic Terror. If you have a question or comment, you can join us on the phone toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. One of the myths that was first advanced, at least for me, in the first Gulf War and was added on to and embellished in the current conflict in Iraq is the idea that America's aerial firepower is so precise that we can take out a building and not kill the inhabitants, that we can take out a building and not kill the civilians who happen to live across the street. And certainly we do have some very precise, at least relatively speaking, aerial munitions that we use. But there's a lot of misleading, and I believe that the media helps advance the mythology here, a lot of misleading information about the extent to which we use these precision weapons. And I know in the first Gulf War, the illusion was generated that most of what we dropped was these very precise laser-guided computerized GPS kinds of bombs, when in fact I think 80% was dumb bombs that were part of a Pentagon inventory clearance from the 50s and 60s. To what extent do you buy into the Pentagon's representation that our bombing during shock and awe, the early phases in Iraq, was so laser-focused that it was the cleanest aerial campaign in military history?
Well, you know, it may have been the cleanest, but it's still pretty dirty. And in military history, you know, the notion of precision, by the way, which the military never defines, nor do they ever define minimal in terms of minimal collateral damage. They just forget to do that for us, conveniently, you know, to their advantage. But the concept of precision bombing is that concept has been used ever since the first bombs were dropped at the end of World War One on Berlin. One of the prophets, General Hugh Trenchard of Great Britain, talked about precisely bombing Berlin neighborhoods, working class neighborhoods, and factories instead of the whole area. So the concept of precision, especially if left undefined, is a very wonderfully politically elastic term. Now, it is true, as you say, that dumb bombs were the majority of what was dropped in Persian Gulf 1, and there's a majority of what was dropped in Chakanaw as well, and in Afghanistan. But, you know, they're still very dirty. I mean, you can't have it both ways. Either you have precision weapons. They're not even called smart anymore. They're called brilliant. That's the new language that's used to describe them. And so, as in Chakanaw, you end up hitting civilian houses. You end up hitting civilian infrastructure that they depend upon. By the way, that is the purpose of Chakanaw. And you end up, as in the case of hitting marketplaces in Baghdad, you end up hitting, as in Fallujah, end up hitting health facilities, hospitals, and medical clinics. Okay, now, if they're so precise and you're hitting them, then obviously you're hitting them on purpose and you're killing civilians on purpose, which is what we call terrorism. Now, if you're hitting those things and you come up and you say, well, they're by accident, or, you know, our missiles went astray, then by definition you've undermined your whole notion of brilliant precision weapons. You can't have it both ways, but, you know, but they have had it both ways because people really haven't examined, I don't believe in the way that I did, examined, you know, this obvious hypocrisy and doublespeak.
One of the terms that has crept into our lexicon, and people seem very comfortable with it now, is WMD, weapons of mass destruction. And I view that as a term that has been selectively applied to the enemy's weapons. We don't ever use it to describe our own. I believe we've used chemical and other weapons in Iraq, including phosphorus and other elements that really, including cluster bombs and depleted uranium, that do qualify clearly in my book as weapons of mass destruction. But in general, aren't aerial bombardments the use of large-scale WMD?
Well, they turn out to be. If you look at the Lancet study that came out in 2004, October 2004, which the John Hopkins group said that 110,000 Iraqi civilians had died, which of course is multiple times what the body count of 9/11 was, and they said 79% of them were from the bombing. Well, either you got a lot of accidents out there going with this bombing, or you're aiming at civilians. But back to your point, you know, most people would agree that 110,000 or 70,000, 80,000 civilians who are dead is probably should qualify as a weapon of mass destruction.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at what point do you cross the threshold from a weapon of non-mass destruction to a weapon of mass destruction?
Yeah. And therefore, is it safe to say that your view is that, in general, the use of aerial warfare is terrorism, and therefore should only be used in defensive or war situations that can be clearly called just?
My position, Peter, is this: if you want to use aerial bombardment to win wars, fine. But then you can't then say you're conducting a war on terrorism and escape the terrorism label, because what you're doing is you're conducting a war on terrorism with a war of terrorism. And, of course, politically, that's disadvantageous given the pejorative connotations that we've all been encouraged to adopt about the concept of terrorism. They do it, we don't.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you can't use aerial bombardment where you're killing thousands, if not hundreds of thousands. And in the history of aerial bombardment, the United States has killed millions of civilians and say, oh, that's not terrorism, when we all know that the core meaning of terrorism is indeed killing civilians,
yeah,
and wounding civilians.
We're talking with Professor Bo Grosskopf. His new book is out from Zed Books. It's called Strategic Terror, The Politics and Ethics of Aerial Bombardment. Grosskopf is Grosscup. If you want to Google it. And we'll continue in just a moment. It's a fascinating look at the history of aerial warfare going all the way back to World War One. We're going to go to the phones in the next segment. You can grab a line toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm Peter B. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
The Billy Sunshine Show.
Billy Sunshine Show.
With P-Lar. With P-Lar.
Sunday at 3 o'clock, we're going to be doing something new, something different, or we'll do the same old thing, take your phone calls. One thing we know for sure, I'll have something to say. What? I don't know. I never know until I've said it. Find out what's the next thing to come out of my mouth.
The Billy Sunshine Show with P-Lar.
Sundays from 3 to 5. 3 to 5.
On AM 540. KRXA.
Here's your latest traffic for the Monterey Bay area. First, Salinas, Highland Drive at El Rancho Way, an accident. A big rig truck kicked up a rock and it cracked a car's windshield. Both vehicles were on the shoulder. Prunedale, Pisante Road at 101, an accident. A car hit a parked pickup truck. CHP is on the scene there. Prunedale, Meridian Road west of Highway 156, a grass fire is burning near the roadway. The fire department is en route. Live Oak, 7th Avenue at Capitola Road, traffic lights not working properly. The left turn signal is not cycling. Traffic brought to you by bottlesandcans.com. Recycling refunds have gone up now. Small beverage containers are worth 5 cents. The bigger ones worth 10. Visit bottlesandcans.com. Recycle, it's in your hands. I'm Michael Kidd for KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show with CSU Chico professor Bo Grosskopf. He's the author of this new book called Strategic Terror, The Politics and Ethics of Aerial Bombardment. And our lines are lit up, so let's go to your calls right now. But first I have to flip over here to get the right screen. And up first, Joe in Phoenix. Hi, Joe. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show. Yes, we can hear you.
Hear me?
Yep. I hear you okay, Joe. Can you hear us?
Yep. Can you hear me okay?
Yep. Go right ahead.
Am I on?
You are on. If you ask me one more time, I'm going to move on. Do you have a comment, Joe? I think Joe's having a hard time hearing us. Give us a call back, Joe, okay? We'll take your call if we can. Patrick, Carmel Valley, go right ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering, Neil Sheehan's book, A Bright Shining Lie About Vietnam, the parallels to the current war are incredible. When he's working for USAID in Vietnam, he said every single bomb that was dropped on the Vietnam increased the insurgency. And that is exactly what is happening here, and what I predict will exactly what will happen when we start bombing Iran. What do you think?
Professor?
Well, the whole act of the way we're conducting the war, whether it be on the ground or from the air, is, according to even the CIA, we were warned about this before the invasion, is increasing the insurgency. The CIA uses the term blowback to describe it, and that's exactly, the notion that civilians don't have much of a will to resist has never proven to be the case. In any war where air power or when particularly when air power was used. That it had, it, for example, in World War II, the massive bombing by the British and the Americans of Germany simply fortified not only the will of the German people, but the productive forces of Germany in terms of their war effort. So it's a false, you know, and of course, what does it do? It simply creates a situation where people want revenge, and that is what creates the insurgency, the will to resist, the will to say, hey, you're not going to do this to me and my people.
What do you think will happen in Iran? Do you think we'll bomb and the same thing will happen as happening in Iraq?
Well, you know, right now there's a real battle going on within the military. The Air Force, of course, who are the proponents of shock and awe or strategic bombing theory, want another shot at it to prove, in fact, that they can win a war through air alone. And from what I understand, they pretty much have Cheney and therefore Bush's ear. Within the Pentagon, the other military forces, armed services, are resisting this particular idea because they know in the end, as which has historically been the case, they're going to have to put boots on the ground. And they're already in a strapped situation relative to the Iraqi and Afghanistan situation. So,
and some of the speculation about the appointment of Admiral Fallon to head up the CENTCOM command in charge of Iraq and Afghanistan, which doesn't really require a Navy man's skills, is that if we do in fact attack Iran, it would be under his command and it would involve large naval-based aerial movements. So that's one of the theories that is circulating right now. And we have the Stennis Carrier Group that has been dispatched from Seattle in the last week to the Persian Gulf. So those are bits of information, not necessarily conclusive. Patrick, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
All right, Jim is back from Phoenix. Joe is back from Phoenix. Joe, do you hear me now?
Yes, I can. Sorry about that, Peter. It was real cloudy here, and who knows, maybe between here and San Francisco, the weather is breaking up our waves.
Okay.
This is really a very interesting show. Thank you for having your guest. Interesting concept. Let me just give you a couple items of insight, if I may, from just personal experience. I know personal experience often is odious, but it's the best I have to rely on. Long ago, I was an infantry platoon leader in Vietnam. We thought in that war that we could use our massive firepower to accomplish whatever it was we were trying to accomplish. After all these years, I'm still not so sure what that was. But now we've learned that you cannot, in guerrilla warfare, just blow the hell out of everything unless you're going to have those boots on the ground, that rifleman, that infantryman, manning the post, planting the flag, securing the place, and keeping the peace. This is what we have in Iraq right now. We blew the hell out of everything over there in an unjustified illegal war, a phony invasion, and now we're occupying it, and we didn't do well, and now we're talking about maybe doing some more over there and maybe in Iran. And the problem is the American public has been kept ignorant, deliberately so, to not be informed of the awesome firepower and the death and destruction we've wreaked over there. There's no way in hell that you can bomb sortie after sortie, send flight after flight after flight, and drop these large munitions without killing thousands of innocent non-combatants. And to prove the point, I remember years ago when there was an arc light, that's B-52 carpet bombing, which is one of our favorite weapons of terror, they would require us to be 3 kilometers outside of the area when the bombs are going to be dropped for safety purposes. For mm-hmm. That's one point. And then I remember another time in February of 1968, an platoon had run into an NVA regiment. We'd made contact with them, held them off, got reinforcements, and then we called in an airstrike, and they required us to be about a click away from the area where we called in just a tactical airstrike. That's just a jet dropping maybe 300 or 500-pound bomb. And I remember hearing the explosions and then hearing a zzz, 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 and all of a sudden a chunk of metal landed about 2 feet away from my leg,
wow,
still burning hot from the blast.
Now, Joe, my time is tight, so let me get a comment from the professor. Go ahead, Bo.
Yeah, what he's describing is what historically has been called carpet bombing, but it's really box bombing. It's just area bombing. My comment simply is this, that those people in the military, particularly in the Air Force, who are such advocates of shock and awe and talk about precision and smart and brilliant weapons, I would just like one time for them to, even in a training exercise, to simply stand close to one of the targets and see how precise they are.
Would you like to, say, you know, fire an arrow at an apple on one's head? Thank you for the call there, Joe. I appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Now to Jim in Phoenix. Jim, you're on the air now. Go ahead.
Thank you, Peter. Two comments. One, that documentary with Robert McNamara, what was it that he said his boss, I think it was Ira Eaker, said after World War II that if we had lost this war with the bombing we did in Japan, we would be tried as war criminals.
You're talking about the Fog of War, the movie.
The Fog of War, exactly. Mm-hmm. The other comment, and I have to kind of take you to task a little bit, because you're doing exactly what you say the media is also doing. It doesn't matter how precise a bomb is. If it's a 100-pound bomb, if it's a 500-pound bomb, and it goes exactly on its target, if you're in the building next door, if you've ever seen any film taken from bombers in World War II, that pressure cloud that comes off of the bomb, it doesn't stop at the perimeter of the property line. It keeps going until it dissipates. And like the previous caller said, shrapnel flies everywhere. And shrapnel is not just the metal in the bomb. It's the glass that's in the windows of the buildings next door. It's the furniture. It's the bones of the people. It could be just about anything. And
understood.
All that,
Jim,
no matter how precise where it lands.
I appreciate your comment, and I understand your correction there. I'll take it. Bo Groskopf, thank you for joining us on the program today. I want to recommend your book, Strategic Terror, The Politics and Ethics of Aerial Bombardment. Let's talk again.
Thank you, Peter. So much enjoyed it.
All right. That's Bo Groskopf, and he is a professor of international relationships, California State University at Chico. Coming up next, a lot of news in the election protection arena, including challengers to congressional results. Brad Friedman joins us next on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has three locations to serve you better wherever you live. All three locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. President Bush will make the final decision within days, but a plan for a troop surge in Iraq is taking shape. CBS News correspondent David Martin reports Defense Secretary Gates is recommending an immediate buildup of 10,000 troops with the option to double that number in the spring.
The plan is known as 5 plus 2. Five Army brigades into Baghdad plus two Marine battalions into western Iraq. Two of the Army brigades would go into Baghdad starting in January, with the other three on call.
Mr. Bush will announce his plan next Wednesday at the earliest. In the meantime, White House spokesman Tony Snow says he's still in consultations.
We have thrown the doors wide open to people who bring all points of view precisely because we want to figure out how to get this absolutely right.
This surge is a bad idea.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi have sent the president a letter urging him not to increase troop levels.
If he's listening to his commanders, he can't do this. I know he's shuffling some in and out, obviously, because they're not telling him what he wants to hear.
The Pentagon confirmed today that Admiral William Fallon will become head of Central Command as General John Abizaid retires, and General George Casey, now the top U.S. commander in Iraq, will become Army Chief of Staff. In the House today, the new Democratic majority hit the ground running. CBS News correspondent Bob Futz has that story.
If he's listening to his command.
The House Democrats wrapped up a series of rules changes aimed at cleaning up corruption, reducing the influence of lobbyists, and starting to get a handle on the runaway federal debt. It severely limits travel paid for by outside groups, bars all gifts from lobbyists, and stops trips on corporate jets. It requires immediate public disclosure of which member puts money in a bill for a special project, a so-called earmark, and restores a long lapse collapsed pay-as-you-go budget rule that says new permanent spending or tax cuts have to be offset so they don't result in a higher debt. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
The Democrats have introduced a bill to cut the cost of the Medicare prescription benefit. It would allow the government to negotiate with drug companies for lower prices. Wind damage is the weather story of the day. High wind knocked out power to thousands on the West Coast, and the Southeast took a pounding from severe storms. Shailene Reginas is an elementary school principal in Liberty, South Carolina, where cars in the parking lot were piled on top of each other.
Prior to dismissal, a tornado touched ground and caused some of the cars to actually lift off the ground.
15 people suffered minor injuries. In the southern plains, still struggling to recover from back-to-back blizzards, there's another snowstorm that's dumped up to 8 inches of fresh powder in Denver. Today on Wall Street, the Dow took a plunge down 82 points to finish the week at 12,398. The Nasdaq off 19 points at 2434. The price of oil came up a bit, but not too much. It closed at $56.31 a barrel. This is CBS News.
So where do you two keep the books for your contracting business?
It's all up in the old noggin.
Yep, all our sales figures are right in his head.
I see. Does that concern you?
Not at all.
Every waking moment.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business. QuickBooks. You can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid and who hasn't. It even makes tax time a cinch.
We need that.
Are you sure? I got it all right here.
I'm sure.
QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at CompUSA, OfficeMax, or Circuit City.
Sweet! I've been waiting for lunch all day!
Me too! Natalie, I'll trade my apple for your potato chips.
I don't know, Matthew, my potato chips or your cookie?
Let's see. Billy, what's that?
Rich chocolate Ovaltine!
Rich chocolate Ovaltine!
An apple and my gummy bears for the Ovaltine?
No way!
Potato chips and grape juice for the rich chocolate Ovaltine?
No way!
Two cookies, bubblegum, and my Hershey's chocolate milk?
Double no way!
Aww! More Ovaltine, please!
You can touch, but you can't take. Apparently, someone didn't understand the rules at a ghoulish exhibit in Seattle. Heather Bosch of station KIRO reports someone stole a human kidney.
The kidney's preserved with polymer. It's part of a display of real bodies and body parts. Josh LaBelle, who helped bring the exhibit to Seattle, says it disappeared from a booth where visitors could touch organs.
And apparently someone at the touch booth pulled a fast one and stole the kidney.
Why?
I don't know. I'm really dumbfounded.
He says Bodies, the exhibition's been touring the world for 2 years. This is the first time anything's been stolen. Heather Bosch for CBS News, Seattle.
A $10,000 reward is offered for the kidney's return. You may have heard about the mysterious heavy object that fell out of the sky and through the roof of a home in Freehold Township, New Jersey. Well, it's been analyzed by scientists at Rutgers University, and they say it really did come from outer space. It's a meteorite. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Now you can dial a diamond and save half by calling Empire Diamond at 1-800-SAVE-HALF. If you're in the market for a solitaire, engagement ring, anniversary, or investment diamond, then shop around, get the best price, and then dial a diamond at 1-800-SAVE-HALF. Empire will advise you on size, shapes, and values. They'll sell you diamonds directly from the source without a middleman's markup. These diamonds are guaranteed to be priced at half the retail price. A diamond certification by the Gemological Institute of America will be faxed or mailed to you. For qualified buyers, your diamond will be sent to your home or office for a free 10-day no-obligation inspection. Upon your satisfaction, you then pay for your purchase and get a 60-day money-back guarantee. Empire Diamond, located in the Empire State Building for over half a century, guarantees the lowest-priced diamonds, 10-day free inspection, and money-back guarantee. Save over half on your diamonds. Call 1-800-SAVE-HALF. That's 1-800-SAVE-HALF. Visit us at dialadiamond.com.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. This is Call to Democracy.
Tuesday in November.
Does your vote really count? And did they actually count your vote?
Lines were long, but I didn't care. I had a water, a hat, and my folding chair. Walked up to the booth, didn't say a word. Sure that my voice would be heard. I hit that button, my vote was sent. Now nobody knows exactly where it went. I lost my vote. It isn't fair.
Ah, but it only happened in one district in Florida, you know?
I lost my vote. Now do you know? Did my ballot go?
Yeah, that's Ellen Buxtell. And every Friday, we spend an hour with his Bradness, Brad Friedman, the proprietor of bradblog.com and our leading advocate for clean elections in this country and integrity of those elections. Happy New Year, Brad.
Thank you, my friend. I'm back at you. How are you?
Nice to talk with you again. It's been a couple of weeks.
It has been, but good news is, while we were off, while I was off, we've saved democracy, so everything is fine.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Good.
Taking care of that during the break.
Well, I first of all want to comment that apparently during the break you had a little extra time to spend perusing the Fox News Channel, because you sent out a blurb today with a screenshot from the Fox News Channel of the historic handoff of the gavel from Republican John Boehner to Democrat Nancy Pelosi yesterday. And the Fox News Channel text, the chyron below it reads, 100 hours to turn America into San Francisco.
That's right.
That's beautiful.
Well, that's what you get from all that fair and balance that they have to offer at the Fox News Channel. It's unfortunate on the radio we can't put the word news in quotes, as I do over at Brad Blog, but man, how about that?
That's just amazing. It really is. Well, Brad, there's a lot to talk about. Why don't we start off with yesterday's front page New York Times story about the entity that is supposed to be fairly and balancedly certifying electronic voting machines, and it turns out that their work cannot be certified.
Yeah, this is an absolutely incredible story, stunning, I would add. It turns out there are three, and you and I believe we've talked about this before, three different private companies that make up what is called the Independent Testing Authority, or the ITA. Trouble is, they're not independent, they don't do much testing, and they're not particularly authoritative, as they are chosen.
Well, then the name's perfect, according to Orwell standards.
Exactly right. They're actually chosen by the voting machine companies themselves, and they are paid by the voting machine companies themselves, and they actually are the labs that test these machines, such as they're tested at all, at the federal level. It's sort of the last step before they're given federal certification. Well, each of the three labs tests a different aspect of the voting machines, one their software, the other the hardware, another the firmware, and so forth. So even these labs, which are paid for by the companies themselves, are not allowed to test the voting machines in full. You know, they never get to look at the full package at the same time. And further, they only look at what the voting machine companies tell them to. So it is a scam, and I've pointed out before that this means no one in America actually fully tests the voting machines that we use in all 50 states in every election in this country. It's an absolute scam. That said, it appears to be worse than we thought. The U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, the EAC, is supposed to be overseeing the ITA. Well, they haven't been. The EAC themselves are completely compromised, completely corrupt, and it turns out that as of July, they actually refused to certify one of those labs. Cyber is the name of the lab that they refused to certify because, as it turns out, the lab itself had inadequate paperwork, inadequate testing procedures, and so that lab has yet to be certified under this new program that the EAC is supposedly running. But what's incredible here is that that happened last July.
Yeah.
And the EAC never told anyone about it. They still haven't released the information publicly. And, in fact, it was only the New York Times, who put this information out here. That means that every single voting machine in America, Peter, that was used in the November election, just about every one of them would have had to have received some form of testing from that lab, that cyber lab that was, you know, had inadequate testing procedures, and yet the EAC allowed those machines to be used anyway and never told elections officials about the problems with the cyber labs. It is extraordinary, and it underscores the fact, frankly, that the EAC is so corrupt, is such a failure, is so compromised, that at this point, I'm recommending this EAC be abolished altogether. They serve absolutely no purpose anymore. It's a disaster.
Yeah. And it is remarkable, given all of the heat that has been on and the attention that you and other election protection activists have brought to these issues, that this was permitted to stay under the radar and remain unreported until just yesterday.
Well, it is because there has been no one overseeing the EAC when you had the Republicans in Congress. And in fact, I had a story some time ago that we talked about where the first chair of the EAC, DeForest Soares, I think we had him on the show together, didn't we?
We had him on election night.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Bush appointee. He resigned from the commission last year. I've lost track of the years now, but he resigned from the commission, saying that it was, you know, completely a fraud, that Congress and White House didn't give a damn about election reform, there was no standards for voting machines, and that elections were ripe for stealing. I mean, since then, he left, and the most partisan political operatives have been appointed to head up this commission. I mean, it's an absolute joke. Nobody's overseeing it. Never mind the fox guarding the hen house. There is nobody guarding the hen house at this time, and I can only hope and pray that the folks in Congress figure this out and figure it out quickly to do something about it, because, you know, mind you, folks are talking about 2008, of course. The truth of the matter is, I think we're only about, 15 or 16 months away from the primary, certainly out here in California, for the 2008 election. And this system, this election system, needs to be scrapped, frankly, from top to bottom. And we've only got about 16 months to do it at this point.
Well, you know, there are a couple of really expert individuals who are available right now who could be named to the EAC. And I'm thinking of Catherine Harris and Ken Blackwell. And you can imagine that Bush thinks they're the kind of experts he wants in charge of our electronic voting.
You know what? They are. And it would not faze me for a second if, J. Kenneth Blackwell was named to that body. I'm not kidding. The woman who is coming in as the chair of the EAC, her name is Donetta Davidson. And she is so unbelievably partisan. She actually went down right after the election in November. She went down to Florida. There was a meeting of elections officials and EAC and so forth. And she actually said out loud, and I don't believe I've run it yet on the Brad blog, but I've got the audio tape. She actually said she was disappointed that the Democrats won because she had an agreement with the Republicans in the Senate to keep Congressman Rush Holt's election reform bill from ever seeing the light of day over in the Senate.
Wow.
This is the woman who heads the EAC, the Elections Assistance Commission, the only federal body that oversees all of our electoral systems. It's absolutely stunning. She's now the chair, and now she's running around in response to this New York Times piece about the decertification of cyber, saying, oh, well, you know, don't worry. There's three full levels of testing that go on at the federal level and the state level and the local level. The fact of the matter is there is no testing at the federal or at the state or local level virtually at all. California is one of the best states for testing, and we've discussed how woefully inadequate the testing is in this state under Bruce McPherson, the thankfully outgoing Secretary of State.
Yeah, he's got one more day.
And that's right. And in most of the states, I was speaking with John Gideon of Voters Unite about this last night. I said most states do it the way Colorado did it, which we learned, in Colorado, you may recall that lawsuit where it turned out the guy they had hired to do the certification had no qualifications for it whatsoever, and his certification amounted to taking the machine out of the box, making sure the paperwork was there, turning it on, turning it off, and say, great, it's certified for the state of Colorado. And I mentioned that to John Gideon. I said, most states, I think, are like that. He said, yeah, Donetta Davidson was the Secretary of State of Colorado.
Oh, my God.
She's the guy who hired the guy in Colorado who was doing that certification, that rubber stamp certification. It is that bad, Peter.
Wow. That's just amazing. Brad, we're going to take a break, and as we continue, I want to talk about the challenge to congressional elections, including the Jennings-Buchanan race and the Feeney-Curtis race in Florida. That's coming up, plus your phone calls if you'd like to talk about election issues. Brad Friedman's with us this entire hour. And lines are open toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. That's 1-888-5-PETER-B. We'll continue in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
KRXA 540, progressive talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's A Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
This is Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. As your licensed real estate broker, our mission at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors is excellence and contribution, and our only concern is to promote and protect your interests. Quite simply, if the best result for you means no deal for us, we will immediately tell you. Selling but concerned about tax consequences? As a CPA, I can advise you of the implications of any capital gain. Seeking income-producing property? With a Stanford engineering degree, I have developed cash flow analysis to evaluate various opportunities. If you're buying a home, my promise is to help you find your dream house under the most favorable terms. We at Pruneta Real Estate Advisors are dedicated to our community. We will contribute $250 out of every local transaction to the school of your choice. I am Laura Pruneta of Pruneta Real Estate Advisors. Call me at 753-5310. That's 753-5310. Stop by 1271 North Davis Road in Salinas, across from Applebee's, or browse to prunetarealestate.com.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Here's your latest traffic for the Monterey Bay Area. First in Prunedale, Visante Road at 101, an accident. A car hit a parked pickup truck. A tow truck is on the scene there. Live Oak, 7th Avenue at Capitola Road. The traffic lights are not working properly. The left turn signal is not cycling. That's why you're still waiting. Well, we do have some road construction to report. First in Santa Cruz, Soquel Avenue between Seabright Avenue and Parkway. There will be paving work until 6 p.m. today and possibly tomorrow, Saturday. That work will involve lane closures and detours and will interrupt bus routes along Soquel Avenue. Right now, some slowdown. Southbound Highway 1 is slow between Monterey and Carmel. This traffic is brought to you by Quaker Oats Company. Help your heart by taking the Quaker Smart Heart Challenge. Research suggests your cholesterol could be dropped by eating Quaker oatmeal for 30 days. I'm Michael Kidd for KRXA 540.
Knobs.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have to do something, Charlie. Try pushing that button there.
Yeah, what about that button over there?
No. How about that one?
No, not that one either.
Oh, God.
I know. I'll try pushing this one. Put my hat, would you? There's a good fella.
All right, I'll try pushing this one. It's the Peter B. Collins Show as we continue our weekly visit with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. The lines are open if you'd like to talk with us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Brad, next I wanted to ask you about the developments in Washington related to the contested congressional elections. A total of four of them have been challenged in Florida, but the two that appear to have the most traction are the Christine Jennings, Vern Buchanan, is that his name?
Christine Jennings, Vern Buchanan race, where 18,000 votes seem to have disappeared in an election that on ESNS touchscreen systems, in an election separated by just 369 votes.
Right.
That's
Florida 13, right?
Florida 13, mm-hmm. Correct. There's also, as you mentioned, three other elections also being challenged in Congress under the Federal Elected Contested Elections Act, where the Congress essentially gets to decide who will be seated in the House. Now, they've gone ahead and they've seated all of these so-called certified winners, four of them from Florida. There's another race that's being challenged from Louisiana. They've gone ahead and certified all of these folks, all Republicans, provisionally for now. And each of the candidates that are bringing these challenges are entitled to a hearing in their case. Certainly the most notable, or the one that's gotten the most news, is the Jennings-Buchanan race. And in fact, some breaking news there today, just a few hours ago, the new head of the U.S. House Administrative Committee, Juanita Millender McDonald, mm-hmm. who has taken Bob Ney's place. You remember our old friend, Mr. Ney?
Yeah, he's no longer available to serve.
Yeah, for some reason, he's not available to serve, at least not in Congress.
No, he's serving a sentence.
That's right. And so he's gone. So the Democrat now, Juanita Millender McDonald, has sent a letter down to the judge, to the court, actually, the appellate court down in Florida, telling them that it is her opinion and Congress's opinion that the court should order the release of the source code from ESNS, those touchscreen machines that were used in that election. Just before the end of the year, it was really the last day of the year, actually December 29th, late in the day, Friday, the judge in the case down there in Florida where the election is also being contested determined that the source code for those voting machines where 18,000 votes disappeared without a trace, the source code should not be released to the plaintiffs because he said that it was the proprietary information of the company. And that I guess they have a right to keep their proprietary software a secret rather than allowing the voters of Florida to figure out what the hell went on.
And didn't the judge insert a snarky personal opinion and try to dismiss the whole issue as speculation on the part of the Jennings side?
Well, that's right. He said there was a speculation, a conjecture. There was absolutely no evidence that anything went wrong here. I mean, it was really the most bizarre ruling. I we've got the ruling up in full over at Brad Blog, but I don't know what he was possibly thinking. And I immediately talked to the attorneys after the ruling. They said, "You bet, we're going to appeal." They have now done so, and with this letter from the House, I think it's putting the courts down there on notice that if they don't release that source code, I suspect they may invoke the subpoena power. Finally, subpoena power. You remember that.
Oh, yeah. What a nice idea.
Exactly.
Well, and to me, Brad,
be, invoking a subpoena to get at that source code because they have to at this point. It's the mm-hmm. only way they'll ever be able to determine, I believe, what happened. Really, in that Florida 13 race.
Yeah, and to me, the real gratifying element here is that Democrats in Congress, in Washington, are taking this issue very seriously at last.
Well, they are indeed, and I spent a good deal of my, what we can call my Christmas New Year's holiday, sort of talking to folks in Congress, looking at some of the legislation. In fact, I was able to review a draft for the new Rush-Holt legislation that will be refiled in this Congress very shortly. I've been promised I would not release any details on it just yet, given under that condition. But suffice to say, I'm encouraged. There's a lot of real good stuff in there, and even while there are still some areas of great concern with the new legislation. So that was a draft, however, and I'm told we'll be getting a look at a new draft soon, and hopefully the comments that I've been feeding them about my concerns will be taken into account in the upcoming draft. We'll see.
I sure hope so. And as you are able to reveal that, we look forward to hearing more.
I will tell you this. I know you got to go to a break here, but I will tell you this, that in fact the language has been changed, very importantly, to call for a voter-verified paper ballot as opposed to a paper record or paper trail, as had been the case before.
Very good. Brad Friedman with us. We want to take a quick call from Ed Anoptos, who's got an update for us on Peter Lawfer's visit to Capitola. Go ahead, Ed.
Yes, I was going to mention that as I finished with the last caller yesterday. So.
Oh, yeah, we got cut off by the minimum wage guy. Yeah.
But I think it was very successful. He had overflow crowd at the Capitola Book Cafe. And so I'm part of that. And I also like to give kudos to Brad. It's nice to have a pit bull on your side.
Oh, yeah. And he's a pretty good-looking pit bull, and he doesn't drool.
Well, I don't know if Brad remembers me, but I was the one hustling drinks at Crawford while he was there underneath the tent doing his radio broadcast.
Well, I don't remember you specifically, but if you were hustling drinks in Crawford, let me thank you here and now for having done that.
All right, Ed, Brad.
Trying to keep everybody hydrated there under those difficult circumstances.
All right, guys, I'm up against the break. Thanks for the call, Ed.
Okay,
we'll continue.
Bye-bye.
We got more callers next for Brad Friedman here on the Peter B. Collins Show, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can visit our website, too, peterbcollins.com, for access to archive programs and other groovy stuff.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. We know that our children learn by playing, and the caring staff at Thinker Toys will help you choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. Stop by our beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, and the just renovated Thinker Toys at Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
Deborah Lindsay with Tomorrow Matters on KRXA 540 AM, wishing you a safe holiday season and encouraging you to make earth-friendly choices for your celebrations. Join me each Sunday at 2 to match global problems of today with local solutions for a better tomorrow. Remember, the greatest gift we can give is a healthy planet. Tomorrow Matters, right here on KRXA 540 AM, every Sunday at 2.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special.
Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside. It's Behind the Wheel, the consumer new car review. I'm Peter B. Collins. This week, I've been behind the wheel of the 2007 Nissan Quest, a minivan that gives you everything you could want, if indeed you need a minivan. My Quest demo has a fuel-injected six-cylinder engine that's got plenty of power and a smooth five-speed automatic. It's very well-designed, seats seven, and has every feature you can think of. A big sunroof, power side doors, and, well, just about power everything. DVD with wireless headsets, nav system, satellite radio, but it's really practical, too. I folded down the rear seats and loaded in an oversized six-foot bathtub, and it fit nicely with all doors closed. By the numbers, the 2007 Nissan Quest 3.5 SE gets about 18 miles in the city, 25 on the highway, and stickers in California for about $41,000. Behind the wheel, I'm Peter B. Collins. Continue now on the Peter B. Collins Show, and first and foremost, Stephen Watsonville has a very important message. Go, Steve.
I'd just like to commend our fellow Americans, Peter. And I wanted to ask you about
your... Why? Why do you want to commend our fellow Americans?
Well, I wanted to ask you about your middle initial, but let me first determine whether it stands
Steve.
For Brown.
Steve, spit it out.
I'd like to commend our fellow Americans for flying their flags at half-mast in honor of the Godfather of Soul.
I knew he could spit it out. And no, the B doesn't stand for Brown. It's for Buckeye, my home state. So good. And this is from the phase where James was doing a lot of speed. And I still have my free James Brown sticker right on the side of a file cabinet here at the secret studio location. We continue now with his Bradness, Brad Friedman. Did you pause to honor James Brown somewhere?
In fact, I did. I put up a post, an old video of Eddie Murphy from Saturday Night Live. Did you ever see that video?
Well, was that when he was doing the Veva Jones act?
No. It was actually when he was doing a hot tub party with James Brown.
Huh. I don't remember that.
And it, brilliant. He sings this song in the hot tub.
Uh-huh.
And it's hysterical. If you scroll on down Brad Block, you'll be able to find it. It was one of my favorites from the early Eddie Murphy days. That was my... That was the best I could do for a tribute to James Brown.
All right. Well, I will dive into the blog and look for that. That should be quite entertaining. And I will always remember that it's a man's world, but it wouldn't be nothing without a woman or a girl. And I thank James Brown for that.
You are not the Godfather of Soul, are you?
Oh, no. No, there's never going to be any confusion about that. All right. It looks like Brian in Manchester is next for Brad Friedman. Hello, Brian.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. I want to second that lad's last suggestion there, too. James Brown was a consummate great entertainer. He proved that it's much more than, the talent involves much more than singing, voice quality, all that stuff.
But well, I can tell you.
The staff for James Brown is much more deserved than for Gerald Ford, because I've read the Warren Commission report.
Okay, I'll go along with that. And also, Brian, before, hold on, pause a little bit. I can tell you from personal observation that in addition to his obvious talents, James Brown was very well endowed, because I sat in the front row of a show one time.
Okay. I'll take your word for it there.
Yeah, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay, Glad. Okay. But I wanted to ask Brad there. First, the Virginia senatorial election, the state election in 2006, there was widespread reports of voter suppression, and also the ballot there where Jim Webb, that's a very short name, they didn't put his full name on the ballot. I'm wondering if anything has come of that, any kind of a investigation of that. And also in Ohio, I worked as much as I possibly could from New Hampshire. Hampshire, for Jennifer Bruner for the new Secretary of State of Ohio. I'm wondering, for her becoming the new Secretary of State, and I'm wondering, could any possible criminal prosecution of the former Secretary of State, Ken Anti-Blackwell, and come out of this eventually from the 2004 stolen election? And also charge.
Oh, wait. That's too much to remember, Brian.
Right.
Just hold on here, and we're going to let you come back with another follow-up question.
All right.
So, first of all, Virginia and Jim Webb.
Yeah, I'll try to hit it quickly. They actually did put his name on the ballot correctly, but the Hart InterCivic touchscreen voting machines were incorrectly cutting off his name on many ballots. And, indeed, I also heard and received some reports that I have not been able to follow up myself to look into concerning fraud in that Virginia race. It is notable and interesting to me that George Allen decided not to contest it, given how close it was. But the fact is, you had about 80% of the machines down there were completely paperless machines, and there wouldn't have been much to, you know, if there had been a recount, it would have simply said the same thing, and it would have been damned hard to do much of an investigation on the election at all, despite my calling for him to do exactly that.
Mm-hmm.
And weren't the exit polls also, and once again, showing a larger a range of victory, a larger victory margin for James Webb than actually the official results were showing?
You know what? There may have been. I know that the Election Defense Alliance did a report on that and on a bunch of the exit polls showing exactly that in a lot of races all across the country. I don't remember the data on that specific race, however, so I'm loath to comment one way or another, but it wouldn't surprise me because apparently that did happen all over the country where the exits were showed. They contended that, in fact, instead of, 30 seats, that had the votes been properly counted, the Democrats might have won 40 or more seats in the U.S. House.
Mm-hmm. All right, Brian's next question was about whether we can try Ken Blackwell for war crimes in the United States or if we'll have to go to Germany like Rumsfeld.
That's right. We could probably get it done quicker in Iraq, but that said, I don't know. Well, you were asked about Jennifer Bruner and the new Secretary of State of Ohio and whether she has any control over that. I don't know that she does. However, let me say that I think that there is good reason to believe or at least to hope that a lot of these matters will begin to be investigated in the U.S. House.
Because there's a lot of information out there about that 2004 election from Bob Fitrakis, Harvey Wasserman, et cetera, freepress.org,
mm-hmm.
and your great website. And also I'm thinking that these criminal investigations, they should naturally lead to that November 2nd Election Day morning meeting in Columbus, Ohio, between George W. Bush, Karl Rove, and Blackwell. And I'm wondering, if John Kerry had done that and he had won Ohio, then they would still be prosecuting him and crucifying him in the American media, and he would still be in some kind of a trial for having done won Ohio that way. There's a huge conflict of interest going on there. I believe it's criminal.
Well, I've seen reports of that. I don't know that I've ever seen it actually confirmed that meeting actually did occur. But what is good here is that you've got a guy like John Conyers now heading up the U.S. Judiciary Committee.
Yes.
With subpoena power. Obviously, Conyers is well familiar with what happened in 2004
Absolutely.
And beyond, although a lot of this may come under the purview of the House Administration Committee. That's the one headed, as I say, by Juanita Millender McDonald now, another California representative, by the way.
Right.
So we're going to see what's happening. I understand that Nancy Pelosi has pretty tight control over what gets investigated by these various committees, so we'll see. But my sources are telling me that it would not be – we should not be surprised to see investigations into all of the above, including the voting machine scam, the way the companies have gotten away with bloody murder – the mess at the EAC and everything else. I mean, it's incredible because you have 6 years here where there has been oversight of nothing. So where do you start first? But I think in the course of all of those investigations, I would be lying if I could tell you where they might go. I think there's so much information that could come out in any and all directions that it would be merely speculation to determine, you know, what's actually going to happen. But if I was J. Kenneth Blackwell, I would not be resting particularly easy right now.
Brian, I promised you one more. Go ahead.
Okay. No, I just say we'll keep a good thought about that. And I'm when do you see it? Do you have any idea from the Congress, the incoming Congress, how soon will the voting machine, real voting reform, be on their plate for the incoming, you know, for the Democratic new Congress?
Good question. I haven't gotten any hard timetables. excuse me, hard timetables from anybody yet. But it has been very clear, particularly over the holiday break, that frankly, though it hasn't been spoken publicly about quite a bit by congressmen, that this election reform issue is one they're taking very seriously, and there has been, as I say, a whole lot of jockeying behind the scenes going on about this legislation. So I would expect to see it sooner rather than later. I know that Rush Holt is very hot to get something going. And, of course, with the mess in Florida 13 and the now the House contest, these are going to be coming up right away. And it's going to bring, you know, put the issue smack dab right there in the middle of the national media. They're going to have to do something about it. So I would say, hedging my bets here, sooner rather than later. And the big debate, really, behind the scenes for the moment is on the is whether DREs, direct recording electronic machines, usually touchscreens, will be banned entirely. And, of course, I'm urging that they should.
Yes.
And just before the holiday break, a group of a large coalition of election integrity organizations headed over at velvetrevolution.us, so I hope you'll go over there and sign the letter, made a statement in no uncertain terms that we need a paper ballot for every vote cast, and that DREs, with or without the so-called paper trail, need to go. They simply are unsafe at any speed. So the problem is a lot of the election reform legislation that had been proposed by Democrats had allowed for DREs. Well, that is now changing in light of the various disasters of 2006, and the question is, will the Democrats have the guts to call for the, you know, for getting rid of DREs altogether, especially in light of the fact that we've just spent a few billion dollars on these stupid machines that we're going to have to toss into landfills at this point?
Well, we can send them to Iraq. They're working on democracy there. Brian, thank you for
an informed call.
Good to have you listening in New Hampshire tonight. Vicki in Idaho Falls, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Brad Friedman.
Hi. This whole issue of the voting machines just drives me absolutely nuts.
That's what I'm here for, Vicki.
Because I was a programmer.
Yeah, Brad is your therapist.
Designer. Yeah. Well, he's had good news tonight.
About the
paper ballots.
We were talking while you were talking. You just said you're a programmer?
Yeah, I was a systems designer, programmer.
Okay.
But those, you know, certifying the machines, those tests, those tests are really basically useless no matter who does them and no matter how they do them, because what they're testing for is a positive result, and they're given test scripts, which means that they're told what to key in, and then they're told what results they should expect. And
Vicki, are you suggesting that they operate these voting machine tests on the same level we do as the Star Wars missile defense system?
Hey, I'm afraid so.
Oh, God.
No, it's the programmers that really do the testing. And what you're testing for as a programmer is you're testing for failure. What these certification tests are testing for is a positive result. I mean, you know, think about it. You can't have Granny Aunt B out in the field testing a machine because she doesn't know what she's doing. You've got to tell her what precisely to enter in and what precisely she should get back. And the people that are certifying these machines are doing the same thing.
You're absolutely right, Vicki. You couldn't be more right, which, of course, you know because you're a programmer. But most of the American people don't realize that, and that's why it makes me so crazy when you've got this woman, the head of the EAC, Danetta Davidson, coming out and saying, oh, these machines are thoroughly tested on three levels, federal, state, and local. Well, forget about the state and local because, you know, the states don't have the money to do the proper testing on these systems. Local, forget about it. They do no testing whatsoever. So the only thing you've got is the federal oversight, is those so-called ITAs, Independent Testing Authority, and you're absolutely right in how you describe their process. All they do is test what the voting machines companies tell them to do and give them a pass or fail. They do no red team attacks, hack testing at all. And that's why, hopefully we'll get a chance to talk about it. That's why what's going on down there in Riverside County right now is so interesting, because I think it will, even where it is right now, it is beginning to reveal exactly how these tests are and, in this case, aren't done. You're exactly right, Vicki.
Right. Well, even at that, you know, the only thing that they could certify if they did decent testing would be the one machine that they're working on.
That's right.
Because, and even if you have people examining the source code, that doesn't mean anything because the source code has to be compiled. And an expert programmer can patch the compiled code. So even looking at the source code, testing it, doesn't matter what you do. Those machines, the only way that we can secure the voting system is to have a paper ballot.
Well, Vicki, thank you for a very well-informed call. Great to have you listening out there in the hinterlands. And I know that electronic voting machines drive you nuts. They drive Brad crazy.
Brad, please post that clip that you have of that lady saying that, because I'd like to send it out to everybody on my email.
Got it, Vicki, and I'm stuck in the middle.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
She interrupted my punchline. Don't you hate that? We will resume with his Bradness in just a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, kick off your new year by listening to one of the top experts on investing in real estate, James Ross. He's president and founder of National Real Estate Holdings and will be on the show sharing his strategies on how to build your wealth through real estate investments. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Come on in, and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's a taste, you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery in PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey. PG.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Here's your latest traffic for the Monterey Bay Area. First in Ben Lomond, southbound 9 at Old County Road. It's a disabled vehicle. A big rig got stuck making a turn, and it is blocking the entire roadway. That's southbound 9 at Old County Road. Santa Cruz from Roadwork, the Morrissey Boulevard exit from southbound Highway 1 has closed for 3 to 4 months of road work. Motorists can take Soquel Avenue or the Ocean Street off-ramp to access Morrissey. On-ramp also closed, but the Fairmont Avenue on-ramp to southbound 1 remains open. If you're leaving Silicon Valley on southbound 101, traffic is heavy from Highway 85 to Coyote Creek Golf Drive. It also continues heavy through Gilroy, Prunedale, and into Salinas. Rush into Office Depot for great deals on a wide assortment of file folders, binders, filing cabinets, and more. So hurry in and get organized today. Office Depot, they're taking care of business. I'm Michael Kidd for KRXA 540.
The Peter B. Collins Show continues, and I'm still your humble host, Peter B., 9 minutes away from the hour. Brad Friedman with us, bradblog.com in the classic green and yellow. Check it out. And, Brad, we got more callers, but I want to give you a chance to catch us up on the Riverside 10-to-1 Hacker Challenge.
No, that's 1,000-to-1.
Oh, 1,000-to-1.
Yeah.
See?
See there? Okay, I'll try to do so quickly. Back again just before the end of the year, Supervisor Jeff Stone down there in Riverside did an incredibly, let's call it a foolish thing. He challenged some election integrity advocates on videotape to bring in a hacker. They were saying that there's no machine they know of that can't be hacked. He said, well, then I dare you to bring in your programmer, have them come in. I'll be happy to set up an appointment with one of our Sequoia voting machines and let them try to hack it. And I bet 1,000-to-1 they can't manipulate the machines. Well, that was dumb because, as it turns out, the election integrity advocates took Mr. Stone up on that offer, got in touch with my help with programmer Harry Hursty, who hacked Diebold machines famously in the past. And Harry has agreed to take up this challenge. Some election integrity advocates threw some money into the pot. We have put $1,000 towards his 1,000-to-1 bet, so he'll lose $1,000,000 if he is proved wrong. The latest chapter includes a letter that Stone sent to the outgoing Secretary of State, Bruce McPherson, yesterday, if I have my dates right, or Wednesday, actually, telling him about this challenge, asking if it violated any federal or state laws. It was very interesting that he sent it to McPherson since he only had about 10 minutes left. McPherson has been very good friends to the Republican board down there in Riverside. He didn't send that letter to Deborah Bowen, but what's notable in the letter is he actually says, Mr. McPherson, I've challenged these election integrity advocates to come in and test our machines. The test would include no previous access to the machines, no use of any tools, a 15-minute time limit. You can't reach around the back of the machine. I mean, he goes on and on creating these ground rules that simply were not there in the challenge. And right now at the top of Brad Blog, I've got an article on this, including the letter, and most notably the comments from a number of computer scientists who explain the problem with Jeff Stone's letter, which is the fact that when you are doing a hack test, you wouldn't put restrictions on these voting machines, because the fact is the biggest threat to voting machines does not come from voters walking in off the street and voting. The biggest threat comes from insiders, elections officials, folks who are poll workers who are taking these voting machines home on sleepovers for days and weeks at a time prior to the election. And so any hack test should simulate insider access, the kind of access that a real bad guy would try to get. If, in fact, they wanted to manipulate an election. Mm-hmm. So that story is there, and since I know we're running out of time, let me just toss it really quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
A fabulous article that I urge you to come by to bradblog.com to read. If nothing else, come by for this article. A great piece from Tom Elias in the Ventura County Star today. The best article I've ever seen on e-voting. He talks about what Deborah Bowen plans to do. She says she's going to look at these machines and the certification for these machines from top to bottom. She will consider decertification of all of them. And what I really loved about the article, in the first two paragraphs, Elias points out that it points out exactly who the two groups are that have cost confidence in our electoral system. He places the blame squarely and appropriately for the first time on the folks who deserve it, which is A, the voting machine companies, and B, the elections officials who have been their enablers and apologists. Those are the bad guys, and for the first time in the mainstream media, a columnist a reporter has actually pointed out that fact dead on the money.
Read all about it at bradblog.com. Lucille in La Selva Beach along the Santa Cruz coast, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, Peter. I'm so happy I found you. I've been in Santa Cruz for a couple of months living and from San Jose, and I was thrilled to find your program.
Well, thank you.
couple of quick things, and I'm so glad that I'm hearing people say throw out the voting machines, because basically anything you get on a paper printout is going to be just a record of what you tapped on the screen. You know, it's not going to be what they rigged afterwards. But the one reason why I called in was because I hear this all the time, and it just absolutely makes me crazy, is when anybody's referring to anything the Bush regime has done in Iraq or otherwise, they say we, like, you know, we were a part of this country, we, the United States, and you just got to stop saying we.
All right.
You just got to break that habit, because it's not we at
all.
Well,
next time you catch me, you call right away and slap me, okay?
No. Wouldn't dare.
No, I'm giving you permission.
No, you'll remember.
He's actually requesting it.
But the other thing that I'd like to just throw in there is tomorrow morning on Ocean Beach in San Francisco, they're having an impeached flash mob. They are having 1,200 people, hopefully 1,200. They've outlined the word impeach in the sand, 100 feet high and 400 feet and 50 feet long. And they're going to fill it with bodies, and they've got a helicopter coming over.
Wow.
And it's going to float over the Golden Gate Bridge. It's got great music. There's a, on their website. Hello?
Yeah, I'm still listening.
I'm sorry. I'm getting called.
Yeah, what's the website?
The website is beachimpeach.com, and you can sign up to join in the thing, and it starts at 10:30, but people should be there early to organize and line up behind the letters and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And there's a test flyover on the website on a video that's marvelous.
Okay,
so
Lucille.
If anybody's in the area and they want to participate in that, go to Ocean Beach tomorrow morning, probably around 10.
Okay.
And fill up those letters. It'll
Lucille,
be great.
I'm glad you found us. I'm out of time here, but I thank you for the call today, and thanks for holding on to talk
thank
to us.
Thank you for this discussion. It's wonderful.
You bet. Brad, bye-bye. Just about 30 seconds. I want to thank you for joining us today. I want to direct people to the website. And we are working to get the new Secretary of State, Deborah Bowen, on our program as soon as she gets sworn in on Monday. And so hopefully in the near future we'll get her on to get an update and learn about this top-to-bottom review and potential decertification of the things that we saw McPherson do against better judgment.
I think there'll be some interesting staff appointments that will be coming out as well. Keep an ear on that. And, of course, so much more in 2007. Let's just hope it is the year of accountability.
Thank you, Brad. We'll talk to you next week.
Always a pleasure.
Brad Friedman on the Peter B. Collins Show. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. With the president likely to make his big speech next week, correspondent David Martin reports a plan for a troop surge in Iraq has taken shape.
CBS News has learned Defense Secretary Robert Gates has recommended the president order an immediate buildup of 10,000 U.S. troops in Iraq, plus an option of doubling that to 20,000 by next spring.
The troops would be deployed in Baghdad and in western Iraq to protect civilians from insurgent violence. Even before an announcement, the opposition is lining up.
This is John Harchie in Washington. Democratic leaders now in the majority in Congress have written President Bush urging him not to opt for a surge of more U.S. troops into Iraq.
This surge is a bad idea.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid says the commanders in Iraq he's talked with do not think more troops will lead to success. A message he thinks the president is not getting.
If he's listening to his commanders, he can't do this. I know he's shuffling some in and out, obviously, because they're not telling him what he wants to hear.
Reid promises congressional oversight hearings on the Iraq policy. John Harchie, CBS News, Washington.
It was confirmed today that Lieutenant General David Petraeus will become the top U.S. commander in Iraq, replacing General George Casey, who will return to the Pentagon as Army Chief of Staff. General John Abizaid will retire, and the new head of Central Command will be Admiral William Fallon. Severe storms in the southeast spawned tornadoes today in Georgia and South Carolina. No serious injuries, but homes were damaged by falling trees and cars were tossed around like toys. The plains are getting another storm. Ed Cortes, a manager at a pork plant in Springfield, Colorado, says they've already had quite enough winter weather.
Between the first storm and the second major storm, we probably got around 70 inches of snow.
Recent bad weather forced United Airlines to cancel nearly 4,000 flights in Denver and Chicago, costing the carrier $40 million. In the east, unseasonably warm and snow-free weather persists, and CBS News correspondent Sharon Alfonsi says this seems to be part of a long-term trend.
Scientists say over the last few decades, warmer weather has been messing with Mother Nature's calendar. Plants in Washington, D.C. are flowering 4 days earlier than they did 30 years ago. Loggerhead turtles are coming ashore in Florida 10 days earlier than they did 20 years ago. And male frogs in New York, well, they're getting a jump on the mating season, starting 2 weeks earlier than a century ago.
Two planes almost collided at the